April 17th, 2016 is the Watt Pedro Show.
What are you wearing? Are you wearing something special for me?
I'm wearing a padded flannel.
flannel?
Yeah, because I don't wear them outside, but inside it's kind of like a tunic. Yeah, it's
a flannel shirt, you mean?
Yeah, it's a flannel shirt that's got some kind of liner.
like the Titanic.
Kind of a difference.
So you go medieval. You go for like the medieval look, like Mortis. Like one of the Danish metal medieval look, yeah?
Not so much Danish. maybe more lumberjack.
Cool. I'm a Monty Python. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay.
That's it.
Cool.
But this one's green, not red.
There's a joke in there somewhere.
Yeah. Ready to be explored.
There's a band name in there somewhere, Green Not Red.
There's several album titles. Speaking of which, you got a new album.
I have. I've got a new old album.
That's right. A new album of old memories.
Yes.
Documents. And but before we get to that, first I got to say we started the show off with John Coltrane live. Up against the wall, and the first part got lost. This is one of those things that's recorded. Probably, I wonder how they made. They didn't have a cassette tape in 1963. So, what some
they
guy
had like Studers. They had like reel to reel kind of Studers. They had like those nature guys use those little reel to reel things.
And they would bring these into clubs and what like.
Yeah, I mean, okay. one of my best friends, his mum was Shirley Collins, the folk singer, sure. Right? And she traveled around the States with Alan Lomax recording the old blues guys.
Alan Lomax, yeah.
And they just had these really, like, funny little reel-to-reel things. I mean, in English, like, the BBC used them for nature programs.
Okay. Yeah, didn't one of the Cabaret Voltaire guys turn into one of those guys?
Yes, Chris Watson. He's got this label called Touch, which is really interesting. Yeah, he makes... And the guy from SBK. The guy from... Graham Revel from SBK, Surgical Penis Clinic.
Right.
He made a whole album full of, like, locusts, noises of locusts kind of sampled up and stuff.
By the way, the 17-year cicada is about to come above ground on the East Coast there. We don't have them here in California, but 17 years, you know, they come out. Well, there's different kinds, but this one in particular, it's every 17 years. Do you guys have cicadas?
Cicadas is a locust, is it?
Kind of. It's a weird looking thing, man. It's its own.
I know that, Mike.
And man, they made
Iggy told me how weird it looks.
That's right. But
if you want to be in my gang, you got to do that, dude.
I will, promise. They are intensely loud. I mean, in Japan they call them semis, and they have them all the time. I don't think they wait 17 years. They're there every summer. And first time I heard them, I thought it was a construction site next door.
How many do you need to make a noise?
I think just one, dude. They have songs. There's three or four songs, but they all sound like, I don't know, bandsaws or a belt sanders.
The swarm make a song.
I don't think they do swarms. I think they're kind of bug alone. And you'll see they'll molt. So you'll
Lone Wolf Locust album title.
Yeah, they eat locusts. They're weird. They look like hornets. A mix between a locust and a... Because a locust is kind of a giant grasshopper, and these guys are uglier.
Right.
They're but along those kind of lines, and they don't really make swarms, and but they got to find a mate, and they use these songs, and you would not believe how loud
these guys are. How do they make the songs? With their hind legs or something?
Yeah, it's from rubbing.
I'm rubbing as we speak.
As we speak. As we speak.
This is the 0891 number.
So
you know which kind of number. You a premium number, Mike.
Yeah, you got to stay away from four, right? Because that's
the mark of four.
Yeah, like you can't find a number four parking space in Asia because I think...
in Asia?
It means death. I'm in Pedro. But that's...
All right. I thought John Wetton, who used to be in Roxy Music, was a bass player in Asia.
Right.
And you've been working with Tab Falco, right?
Also, King Crimson. Yeah,
King Crimson, dude.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe the first picture I saw John Wetton, he had air blown hair.
Yeah, I saw him play with Roxy, exactly.
And a body. Yeah, but these were pictures before the Roxy thing. This is, he took Greg Lake's place in King Crimson.
Okay.
And he was wearing a body shirt. I don't think so in Asia because he put on a little weight by then.
What's a bodysuit when it's at home?
A body shirt. It's kind of tapered to, if you're a more younger man, or very lucky less younger man, where you don't have the girth of like a, you know.
I don't think about men the way he
But anyway,
a taper, is a kind of anteater, isn't it?
As long as we're getting into clothes, you're talking about Taff Falco. Yes, he had me wear pointy shoes. I've never worn pointy shoes.
Yes, that was a little bit of a plug here. But I was saying to somebody, we were writing some new stuff yesterday in a little rehearsal room, right?
Yeah.
And there was this young lad from Northern Ireland who I made friends with behind the bar at the cafe. He said, "How's it going?" Blah blah blah. And I said to him, I said, "Look, mate, back in the day, punk rock was more about the clothes than the music, right?
Sure.
And for me, it was kind of an excuse to do something that I didn't have to wear like a uniform or a factory warehouse, like boiler suit in. Do you know what I mean?
But you wore
Bruce the drummer. Bruce the drummer kind of got in the band because he had the right shoes.
Ah. But you used to wear punk rock
at school. There was very few people that had cool clothes, so you kind of told them to play the bass, or said, you know, you encouraged people with a kind of vaguely cool clothes to take up instruments, because all the musicians look like jitters.
Yeah, and you're not going to see much of the feet though with the drum set in the way. But did you?
Doesn't matter. You've just got to know that they're not wearing, you know.
Loafers. I know it doesn't matter, Tab. Mark, because Tav asked me to wear the pointy shoes, but then he put his amplifier in front of my feet so no one ever saw them.
That's part of the reason. Yeah, that's why we do it, mate. Those poetic conceits.
There's this big poetic conceit.
But what does it do with your face? I mean, your hair. Sorry.
I was. Yeah.
Did you have to wear gel?
I had to. No, but he had me wearing an Italian suit. In fact, I wore this suit. It was made out of polyester. So I wore this motherfucker. I mean, I changed the chonies and stuff underneath. But I wore the suit every day of that tour. Never took it off. You couldn't do that with cotton.
From Dr. Feelgood. I remember seeing Dr. Feel. Lee Bruno's thing was sweating wicked. That's a good look.
Yeah, but plastic clothes. Because cotton, if I would have worn flannel, about two or three days of that, there'd be an odor, okay?
Yeah,
but with that plastic, that polyester, you can almost wipe it off the filth.
There's a reggae song, Jester No Wear Polyester. If you search it, play it here, man. It's
a good one.
I thought the Rastas went all about polyester for some reason back in the day. Dr. Alimentado, I think, something about polyester. Three piece suit.
Yeah, that was popular in the 70s.
Wicked.
In fact, a lot of the country western, you would see George Jones in this or Buck Owens.
Wicked. Have you been recording with Falco then? He is cool, man. He is cool.
Tell Falco, me and the Larry, who did the last 2 years of Stooges on the drums.
Okay.
We were the rhythm section. And
fantastic.
We got to record 2 7-inch 45s with Tav Falco. Tav Falco, since behind the Magnolia Curtain, big hero of mine. And when he gave me that call out of the blue.
Wicked.
It really blew my mind. I mean,
you're getting the call. Wicked, mate. That's another tick in the box. Wicked.
He asked for.
You're blessed, Mike. Iggy Tav. Wow.
I'm very, very blessed.
I don't know what they see in you.
Me either.
You must be cheap.
Yeah, that's it. Econo. A jammy Econo.
Well, you must do something that other bass players can't do.
Well, I went and got a China Hofner for him, a Beatle bass. Man, are they a trip? It only cost $250. It weighs about 2 pounds and little flat wilds. It was a whole new experience. And his music, and also the man is a performer, you know. What did Mark Riley call him? I did an interview there in Manchester. Have you been on his show?
Of course, he's a huge fan. Yeah, he's a
great chat,
Mike,
man.
Riley. It's Mike Riley and you, the man on the radio at the moment, mate.
Okay. Anyway, he says, yeah, Tav Falco's a one-off. But wasn't that really what the movement was about, one-offs?
Well, for me, I saw Tav just do it. There's this Rough Trade record shop here, which is a cool shop since back in the day, right?
Yeah.
And I just saw him doing a little talk about a book he'd written about New Orleans or something or other, it's more like something from way back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's Memphis, though.
It came from Memphis or something like that. Yeah.
And also he just has a book of pictures because he got into photography young, too.
Yeah.
He's very, very interesting, man. And not to get nostalgic or sentimental, but he reminds me of the things that attracted me to the movement.
Yeah. Well, he reminds me a bit of Mick DeVille.
Oh, yeah.
And
I think he was
like
a New Yorker,
though. A bit of the kind of street edge of Johnny Thunders. But, you know, it's like I've heard crazy stories about Mick DeVille. So yeah. When you say he reminds you of what attracted you to the movement, what do you mean then? The look or the nonchalance or the what, the street manners?
No, what Mark Riley said, one-offs.
Yeah.
Maybe it's kind of similar.
It's an umbrella for freaks. That's why we called our label Freaks R Us.
Yeah, I love
it's a
that
gathering
name.
Place for freaks, you know.
I love that name. I love that name. That's exactly what I'm talking about, letting the freak flag fly. And yeah. Maybe he's a little similar to Willie DeVille, Mink DeVille, but he ain't a clone. Everybody, no. That's how, what was really kind of special about those days.
Yeah, well, what do you mean those days? It's happening more now than ever, mate.
Okay, then let's hear it for these days. Now,
form your own band.
That's right. Start your own band. That's how I end every gig. Yeah, that's my little outro mantra.
Play some bloody music.
Fucking Stooges.
These old guys just like to chat. Chat on the fireside.
Okay, well, let's talk. Before we get into the record, what about this film Mr. Letts made?
Yes. Oh, my God, Mike. Oh, Friday night, Dan Katz is the bass player, right?
Right.
Came up to London to stay because we're starting to make new stuff for like end of the year next year or something, right?
Yeah.
And our manageress said she wanted to check through some of the footage from Don Letts, right?
Yeah.
And oh my God, I mean, I don't know how I shouldn't really say this, but if these days we would have been put in a special school. do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I cannot believe. I remember me and my brother's like 4 or 5 years older than me, and he got me into music, he was into Kerouac and Ginsberg, so like 11 or 12 I was borrowing his books and seeing what he was getting into, so I kind of matured fast with him, right?
Yeah, he also became a scientist, right?
No, my dad's a scientist. My brother said to my dad, I want to become an artist. He said, I want to go to art school. I want to become an artist. And my dad said, well, you can paint the bloody bathroom.
Okay.
But I remember me and my older brother used to come back from primary school and just get into the house.
What's primary?
Run around and just roll around. We used to call it flip skate dancing. Just let off loads of energy, run around the floor, just.
What's primary?
When you look at this, look at this footage from the Alexandra Palace gig, the Don Letts film.
Okay.
Me and Dan, have you seen it?
No. That's why I'm asking. I'm curious.
Oh mate, it is. It's talk about hyperactive. We're.
Well, how did the idea start? What, he had some kind of footage that you didn't know he had?
Yeah, basically what happened was there's this legendary, it's still, you know, it's going on now. I just heard that Rage Against the Machine are making something for Bernie Saunders, right? It's going on now. There's still, across Europe, there's still quite radical kind of non-commercial kind of protest festivals going on about for different causes or whatever. We've been doing stuff at for Campaign Against the Arms Trade, blah, 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 blah. Rock Against Racism is coming back over here.
Oh, right? I remember that. Yeah, but we call them benefits.
Cash gigs or whatever. So anyway, there was this huge, Alexandra Palace is the legendary place where the BBC had the big transmitting mask, right? Okay. And there's a communist newspaper, socialist newspaper here called the Morning Star, right? Which is kind of independent in its own way. Obviously, it's got a left bias, but it's like Bernie Saunders. It hasn't got outside funding. Right?
Right.
That can pull back on their debt kind of thing. So anyway, it was a fundraiser for them, and the bill was like us, the Au Pairs, the Raincoats, the Slits, John Cooper Clarke, who's a wicked, wicked guy, wow. Blah, 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 blah. A legendary bill for that period, legendary post-punk bill, right?
Yeah.
When I was looking at the footage last night, Ari was just behind the amps dancing with like a 14-year-old Nana Cherry. I don't know how she could dance to that mad music, but she was dancing into the pop groups, Ari from the Slits, right? So anyway, I was living, remember when you were in Berlin and that guy was making that on-off documentary about me?
Tony,
right? We filmed you talking about the pop group, right?
Right.
In that period, that was kind of the period when I was starting to talk to everybody about reforming. So me and Gareth, we've been trawling across the world in that 2 year period. There was a guy in America who ran a pop group fan site called Dixon, who electrocuted himself or something, right?
Oh, but Texas, right?
Yeah, yeah. But we were gathering stuff from Japanese bootlegs, blah, blah, blah. So we got like a big archive of stuff, right? But this Boys Whose Head Exploded compilation is the prime live stuff from the How Much Longer period, and there were these legendary gigs in Germany, which German people say kind of kickstarted the kind of German no wave scene, right?
Sure.
So it's they're legendary concerts. I mean, it's live recordings, but we spent a lot we're not, you know, we spent ages going through tapes, cleaning up, you know. And then suddenly,
Mark, I'm a little confused. You're talking about the album, but I was kind of wondering before we got to that about this movie.
No, the movie, there's a short DVD which is in, which is with the record.
Oh, okay, now I understand.
So it's a CD, DVD.
You gotta hold me by the hand. You gotta hold me by the hand and guide me here, Mark. I'm a little confused.
Okay, so basically, there's the compilation, The Boys Whose Head Exploded, which I just explained, which
it's a collection of bootleg tunes. In fact, I heard of, it was the popgroup.net site.
Yeah.
I love that. Stuff from Finland. Stuff from Germany.
Yeah, there's one called Shadow Street, which is from the last ever pop group concert in Finland when the guitarist John Waddington got so drunk he got off stage and started throwing bottles at his own band.
Oh, whoa. Adios. You know what?
Have you ever done that?
No. My guys, the guys I play, they would be throwing those bottles back. I think this guy's living in Southern California.
No, he's an imposter. Somebody.
Okay.
I heard about him when I was in L.A. Crazy story.
There's an imposter. Wow.
There's somebody passed, and there was somebody in Japan passing themselves off as me. It's just bizarre.
Was he tall?
I've never met the fella.
Okay. There's pop group imposters.
That's somebody pretending to be John Waddington in America.
Wow.
Signing out on disaster.
Because he's the only because you have a young man taking his place when I saw you play there in Silver Lake.
Yeah, John, he's still a mate, and he's still kind of consulting and stuff, but he's not touring. No, John's he's cool. He's in Bristol. But he's not in the live setup. No.
Yeah. It was that young man.
But the pop group is an open door. Like Simon, the first bass player, he's consulting.
Sure.
It's our own. We own it all. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So anyway.
So you got this collection of gigs.
Then there's footage from the last minute. Right, then at the last minute, the thing is, as you're becoming more and more visible, people kind of say, oh, I've got this and I've got that. With Facebook and Twitter and stuff, people are like sending us like lots of ephemera, tapes, blah, 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 right? Gareth lives with Jeanette Lee, who is in Public Image, right?
Oh, yeah, the cello.
Yeah, my first ever... And she runs Rough Trade now with Jeff Travis, the Rough Trade label. My first ever experience of kind of the London scene was in 1974. I persuaded my mum and dad. I was like 13. I pretended to my mum and dad that I wanted to go to the Natural History Museum. I got them to drive up to London. I got them to wait round the corner in King's Road. I'd read about this shop called Acme Attractions, which was selling 50s clothes, supposedly, right? I wanted like a zoot suit. Right. They were around the corner. I walked into this basement. Jeanette Lee, that period, was behind the counter. Don Letts was sat on a scooter, dressed in Beatles clothes. They started selling Beatles clothes. I'd missed the 50s revival. Well, they were already into the 60s revival in London. I bought some pink. I bought a, like Tab would love them. I bought a pair of pink zoot suit trousers, pink pegs, we call them. Blah, 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 blah. And then I went to Bieber's and bought a pair of gold Wellington boots, but they didn't...
Was that the first time you met Don Letts?
Yeah, it's the first time I ever saw... First
he's
time
in
really
Beatle clothes on a scooter.
He was sat on a scooter, right?
Okay.
From that evolved into then... Malcolm had a shop up the road called Let It Rock, selling Teddy Boy stuff. There was a guy in Bristol...
Ah, there was a fake Let It Rock.
Amen Corner... Right, who started buying stuff off Malcolm and from the Acme Attractions. Alan, he was a sax player in Amen Corner. He became the pop group, so he was in charge of the Bristol sort of scene, right? It was often centered around clothes shops or record shops, these little scenes, right?
Sure.
So anyway, so Jeanette and Don have been friends forever. Don also was really close to the Slits, right? So Don's living down the road from Gareth or something. Don phones up Gareth and says, have you got any recordings from Alexandra Palace and this legendary festival?
Yeah.
Gareth said, we've just been going through them to find the best stuff. We've just been going through that whole period for this compilation. He's going, why? And he's going, because I'm showing this post-punk compilation at the British Film Institute, and the sound I've got off my camera, it was just a Super 8 camera he used for all those punk rock movies.
Sure.
It's not that good. If you've got better quality, can I have it? So we just gave it to him, right? And then when we were thinking about his compilation, I said to Shirin, look, this stuff's about... And she just thought, oh, amazing. So there's, I think it's about a 20-minute little. It's all cut. It's rough. It's like a Kenneth Anger film. There's like bits of hair on the film. Do you know what I mean? Proper like Super 8 stuff. But the sound's amazing. I was just listening to it just now, and the 7.5 minutes. Sorry, Mike. I've just been corrected by the voice of
that's,
doom.
That's what she's for.
It's. I cannot believe. I know we're mad now, and I know what kicks off. You know, when we're near each other now, they're kind of mad energy. But looking at that band, looking, you know, I would be a pop group fan. It is demented. I mean, the only band near it is this crazy Japanese band called the Incapacitants or something, who pretend to be in wheelchairs and just make mad. This is beyond. This is, I mean, Gareth is going mental. He's jumping up, and not in a rock and roll sort of way. It's like he's having a fit. Everybody's playing a different tune at the same time.
Okay, that's happening.
Me and Dan were just I shouldn't say this because I know I'm trying to sell records or something, but we couldn't believe our eyes when it is one of the most amazing documents, and if you giggle, that's part of it.
Good. And you know what? You were probably inspired by the people you shared the stage with that day.
Yeah, to a certain extent. But we, personally, I'm not being rude about the English. I was always listening to black music myself. I didn't listen to a lot of, apart from like television and the Dolls and stuff. I didn't really check a lot of that sort of stuff. We were listening to bloody Albert Ayler and Don Cherry in those days, you know, and a lot of reggae. In the van.
Yeah, I can imagine. I hear the influences in the music. But I'm talking about on that day, you had to work the room or the, whatever, the field.
Yeah, there was competition, which was great.
A little
bit
like that. And in a healthy way. I'm talking about a healthy way, not sports, you know.
The Au Pairs. I've got a lot of time for the Au Pairs. And John Cooper Clarke, he's like Tad Falco. He's a British one-off. He's got a radio show like Iggy here now on Radio 6, like same as Martin Riley stuff.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, poet. John Cooper Clarke, classic.
I remember him in pointy shoes.
Yeah, he's still got them.
And that kind of Bob Dylan haircut and the glasses.
Yeah, he's
the
same.
The guy's a wordsmith. Yeah. I mean, he can flow with the verbiage.
He's a dude. Play some of his stuff if you
what you wanted to do then was make this little 7.5 minute thing kind of a component of the package.
Okay. Yes.
I understand now. Because I think John Letts actually did a documentary on the movement because I was actually... to talk for, and in fact, there was two volumes.
Yeah, Attitude, okay. Punk Attitude, wasn't
that's
it? Yeah,
that's it.
Legendary. I remember the Roxy, he was always around. But yeah, legendary footage of the Clash and everything. But this was we were a bit later, you know.
Sure. And I remember talking in that thing and made one of the biggest mistakes in my life. I let my ma talk me into letting her put color in my hair to make it brown. She goes, Michael Watt, you play for younger people. Now, when I look at that footage, it looks like I'm wearing a fucking hat. I would never do that again.
Which footage where?
On Don Letts's Attitude Punk, there's a volume 2 that brings in the U.S. hardcore.
Oh, right.
And I'm wearing
hair
with fucking black dye in it. It looks like I'm wearing a hat.
Oh, right.
So that was a kind
That's Minutemen.
Well, but I wasn't Minuteman. I was a guy in his 50s talking about that with dye in my fucking hair.
Oh, he had interview stuff. Okay, really annoys me. That it's a recent footage. We've got this channel here, BBC4, which has kind of cool music documentaries, and they're making a lot of new and friends of mine work there. They made a good thing about New York and whatever. But the problem, I was watching a thing about Joy Division the other day that they made themselves, right?
Yeah.
There's some, even if it's grainy, really shitty footage or old recordings, there's something, suddenly something comes up and there's this, Ian Curtis was a good lad. I mean, we were running, if we did have any kind of contemporaries, it was Joy Division, really, for me, and the kind of Manchester crew. I mean, Certain Ratio were our mates and whatever. It was that, I felt at home in, like, the Factory and the Russell Club and Tony Wilson, all that.
What about Mark Perry? What about Mark Perry? Was he a contemporary?
Yeah, Mark's a good lad as well. Yeah, Sniffing Glue was the whole thing. It showed you where to put the... Yeah, I had to play the chords. But the thing is about these films is they have an amazing bit of footage that you've never seen before or never heard of, and you really want to get into it.
Yeah.
Suddenly, there's either a voiceover, you can't hear the music, there's a voiceover, or they cut to like a kitchen with a fat version of the person's 30 years late, ruining the music.
It's really lame. I know exactly what you mean, Mark. That's terrible.
So we put it out raw. you know.
Do it raw. So you have the, you have the document.
Punk, always a punk.
Yeah, you have the document. You don't have this kind of.
Exactly.
It's like, you know what that reminds me of? Like, if you went into a art gallery and you had the little work hanging on the bulkhead there, and the explanation was about 50 times the size of the work.
Yeah.
You know, the little spiel they put, the little words.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. They get everything out of context, and then you don't.
And you shouldn't. Half the point of what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be defined. It's not meant to be analyzed.
That's right.
If I was going to explain something to somebody, I'd become a political theorist or I'd become an orator.
Yeah.
The point of art is, because somebody said to me, I had this concept of something about, a city of eyes, right? A new song I'm working on or something. Dan said to me, oh, what's that about? And I'm saying, well, that isn't the point. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Or is it like, absolutely.
The title of the thing is The Boys Whose Head Exploded,
right?
And so people are trying to interpret that in whatever way. The more interpretations, the better. You know, I remember with Bowie lyrics, you'd sit and a lyric would mean something else, and how the lyric is sung next to another lyric, that's part of the thing. It means something different to you every day.
Sure.
Music should be like a nutrient, you know.
Absolute. Absolute. But you know how the just human thing about wanting to nail things down and stiff them up and label it and
bollocks.
Codify it? Yeah, bollocks.
It's bollocks. It can grow. It can be organic. I saw some footage of Debussy himself playing the piano. Do you know what I mean? That's the point. That's why he's playing the piano. If he wanted to talk to you about fucking ergonomics or something, that's why he'd talk to you. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Absolutely.
It's the mystery.
I want to go over the songs. I want to go over the songs on the new record, these live things. Because, not just for the song, but when you hear the songs, do you remember the gigs?
I don't really. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I remember the gigs.
For example,
the weirdest thing is sometimes the actual lyrics mean something to me in that week. It's like I'm giving something. It's like something has floated across, and my younger self is giving me very useful advice or something. It's like I think in life you pick up little fragments of like lines. And it's like a jigsaw, and then suddenly, that what I was thinking about then fits with something I just found out now, or do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. This first one here I want to play is in Milano in 1980. You guys do We Are All Prostitutes. Can you remember that gig?
Yes. There were caged lions.
Whoa. Shit.
We went down to Italy. There was a guy called Red Ronnie. Italy was very radical in those days, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's bits of it still are. There was this thing called the autonomous movement.
Sure.
And there was a radio station run by these lesbians called Radio Free Alice, which got machine guns, right? And there was all these crazy stuff going on in Italy. We went down there and did a kind of, like the Alexandra Palace thing, which was against the Tory party. We went down there and did this kind of union rally thing.
Yeah,
Bologna. Bologna was incredible.
We called these things.
We were on tour with the Slits. As part of the same tour, we went to this club called Odyssey 2000 in Milano.
Sure, it was a disco. It's the first time I ever played in Italy with Black Flag and Minutemen, and it turned into a huge riot.
Yeah, it was a disco, and there was. On one of the nights, they'd have like these lions without any teeth, like in cages, but with dancing girls. But it was like something from Studio 54. I expected Bianca Jagger to ride on naked in a white horse, you know. I felt like Michael. Who was that party monster guy? Michael Alec, whatever. Crazy, 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 crazy. And we were singing about like decadence and feed the hungry. And yeah, it's a disco, but it's like here. That's the space a promoter could have got. But Italy had more effect on me, I think, than we had on Italy. Not that I know. I mean, we've got a big following in Italy, and there was an incredible no wave movement in Italy, which there's only a few compilations that have come out, but there was some great stuff coming out of that there in that period, right?
Absolutely.
And also, my favorite thing is there's this thing called Italo Disco. Right?
Right.
Which is kind of, I mean, Bobby O and some of the kind of gay community got into it, but there's something called Cosmic Funk, right? Which is Italian session musicians kind of making weird library music for Dario Argento or something like Goblin, but it's funky.
Yeah.
Cool shit.
70s. Yeah. Our gig, actually, the kids thought that they were asking too much money for the tickets, so they wouldn't go in. And there was kind of a, the people running that pad were not that together. They sent thugs out to beat people. But the kids kept solidarity, and they actually brought down the price. I'd never and have yet to be at a gig like that where
Brilliant.
The kids took control. Okay, can we talk about the two?
If the kids are united.
That's, what was his name? Percy.
If the kids are united.
Jimmy Percy. Right. But what about the tune?
We were prostitutes.
Yeah, it never was an album. It was a single, right?
Yeah, but we put it on this on the last week.
I'm talking about
a month and a half ago or something. Yeah,
no, but I'm talking about in the day, Mark.
Pardon?
In the day, back when it was released.
I mean, again, if for me, it's like it was a, you know, I'm that soldier, but I'm. Today I'm thinking about the tunes I'm writing today, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's this basic kind of declaration that we are all prostitutes and that capitalism is the most barbaric of all religions.
Yeah, lines from
the
song.
Basically, for me, it's owning your own place in the world. And the problem is with the West.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be preachy or anything here, but I kind of realized at that age when I was writing that song for myself, and I'm not preaching to anybody else, but it's our fault a lot of these things are happening. You know, it's our fault that we're stealing these resource wars. We want cheap petrol or cheap plastic.
Absolutely.
Or cheap,
absolutely.
You know, so it's our fault that we're destabilizing governments to get resource, you know, because often people think politics is something which is not to do with us, but it's because we want cheap goods or the luxury in the West. The British Empire was built on exploitation, you know. I'm not saying that in a guilt kind of way, but when you're 16, 17 and you're finding out the real history of the world, it blows your mind.
Yeah. Now, I remember me and D. Boone getting that 45, and it blew our minds. The words, what you're talking about, but also the music. I mean, we were amazed. How do you write a song like that? Musically, what did you give them the line, or did somebody come up with a bass lick?
No, it's basically, it's like we're doing the same sort of thing yesterday. It comes, so, that one came from a groove. It comes from a Bo Diddley groove, really. So basically, when we were young, you could practice like three or four times a week. So we'd just get a load of cider and something to smoke and just go in a room and pretend we're in a club or a party and just make some grooves and just jump around and enjoy. You know, our first rehearsal, we were just completely drunk playing I Want to Be Your Dog for like 4 hours. We didn't even realize all that time had gone.
That's amazing.
So basically, it's a groove. It's a groove.
Okay,
being from Bristol, funk and reggae were as important to us as rock. You know, rock was a bit for your older brothers and like Dwayne Alvin or whatever. Funk was what we went out and got into and kind of jumped about to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, let's listen to it right now.
We are prostitutes! Everyone has their pride! Oh,
Pedro Show, that was We Are All Prostitutes off the new pop
this
album.
Guy is a nutter. Help! Somebody just phoned up. Phone me up. Get off the line. The train's coming.
The boy whose head exploded, which we're not going to define. We're going to leave it to you people, but that's the lead track. And it, in the day when me and D. Boone first started, it came off a single. And the other side was very interesting also. It was basically reading Amnesty International torture report over some incredible improvised avant-garde. I don't know. It was wild music. I mean, there was no licks. In fact, there's some cello on that, I think.
Yeah. Well, the cello on that is this legendary guy called Tristan Hunsinger, right?
Okay.
Me and Gareth Sager would go and see, like, really out there free jazz guys. Like, there's a guy here called Derek Bailey who had prepared guitar, right?
Yeah,
beyond
respect.
Fred Frith, right, who the Residents got a lot of ideas from. But we were really drawn to this drummer called I really like Peter Brotsman at the moment, right?
Right.
But we were really drawn to this drummer called Han Bennett.
I got to play with him once in Tokyo.
Shut up.
The man is amazing. He told me about playing with Wes Montgomery.
Eh?
He told me about playing with Wes Montgomery. That cat has been around, and he can work a room, man.
It blew our heads. It blew our heads, and this guy called Paul Motion is like completely out of the blue.
Petra just, you know, he just passed away, but she got to make an album with him. That's interesting. Okay, so this was coming from the free jazz influence on that. Okay.
Not on the rhythm. So what again? I mean,
I'm talking about Amnesty number 2.
Yeah. But it's Tristan that's playing at the beginning of We're All Prostitutes going.
Oh yeah, that's right. He's on that too. Okay, he's on both sides.
So we saw these things, and like when we want to crash genres with funk and punk and reggae or whatever, we just thought that we can bring the spirit of we get Tristan in the studio with Dennis Bavell and whatever, and try and capture some of his essence. I did it with Kenneth Anger, which I'm going to try and do with Cecil Taylor next, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you can just, it's brilliant. You're not like having a session musician you're just trying to get the person's character and squeeze it into make some sparks. Yeah, so Tristan was like just doing, he just goes off on one. He starts jumping up and down, doing that same screwing stuff, telling like mad stories where he's playing. The guy's a legend.
What are the Asian voices?
Those Balinese chants, are they Balinese monkey chants?
From Bali.
Yeah.
I hear that when they
get. One of the kind of things I live by is there's a saying in Bali, right? Because this whole thing about, you know, because for us, punk was kind of, it was an enabling thing. It wasn't about wanting to become an artist or become something bigger than somebody else. It was about everybody kind of rising up and having a power that was denied to us. It was enabling, right? So we were never, for us, the audience was more as important as the people in the band. It was this kind of anti-star complex.
Sure, yeah, I like that.
And so there's this saying in Bali, right? It says, we have no art, we do everything well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know what I heard too? When they dance, the eyeballs are really important.
Yes.
And because I helped Perry Farrell out
with Porno for Pirates for a little bit. Another lucky thing for Watt. And he had a tune called Bali Eyes.
Right.
And he showed me the eye thing. It was intense. I think everybody's got something to teach everybody else. If we could just let go of such weird things.
Yeah, but a lot of people think, because the difference between that kind of artist and a kind of activist or somebody who gets engaged, right, is a lot of artists think they're doing something by just reflecting on something after the fact, right? But I often, but the people I like are kind of futurologists, people are dreaming something new. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's up to us to kind of dream the future and leave something interesting for people before us, because Tristan Zara, the Dada people have done it for us. Otherwise, we've been in caves, you know.
That's right. And there's also something to be said about being engaged in the moment.
Yeah. The spectacular now.
Because, yeah, you're right. There was Last Shift, Mr. Zara, Marinetti, you know. Monsieur Breton.
Yeah.
But then there's also going to be the next shift. But me and you, we're of this shift. So I think it's important to be engaged in the moment.
Yeah, and to see what's going on now.
Yeah.
And to say whatever, and you know, we're just part of the tapestry. We're not more important or less important. Because people come up to you and they say, what do you think of this and what do you think of that? I'm thinking, well, why are they asking me? Why would they think I'm you? Do you know? With my lyric writing, all I do is we make the music as exciting as we can and pick and match like those weird sweets in the supermarket and crash genres and just make crazy sparks for our own devices, for our own kind of pleasure. And often with lyrics, I just... looking at things that are interesting in the day, mad science, you know, secret technology, back engineered, psychic archaeology, blah, blah, just things that excite me, that I'm interested in, forbidden history, whatever, and I throw that into the mix and we mash it all up. It's not like somebody's dictating something from high, you know.
Yeah, I think that's very important. What about this gig in Cologne, 1980?
Oh,
because the next tune is Justice. And this song was really intense on me and Dee Boone too. Justice, you know, who guards the guards? I mean, Mr. Snowden in Moscow right now, right? Talking about, eavesdropping on the journalists or something. I was reading in The Guardian or something. I mean, crazy these issues, we're talking 35, 36-year-old recordings.
And we're getting reviews here now of that whole period, saying how relevant it is to whatever's going on now.
Ain't that a trip?
But again, it was just me reflecting what was going on. I was coming up to London. I was going to... There were a lot of problems with fascists marching in this... There's an Indian area called Southall, and it was a really cool reggae band. They're still going. They're called Misty and Roots, right? And somebody, either the police or somebody, attacks this kind of community reggae band, and so all the kind of anti-fascist, rock against racism people would try and stop them marching through these Indian areas, right?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, a teacher, Blair Peach, got killed somehow in one of the demos, right? I remember standing as he was being buried with a raised fist, singing the Internationale, right, with all these helicopters circling overhead. So it's kind of reflecting exactly what was going on that week. That the life stuff on this boy's whose head exploded, a lot of it is from the how much longer do we tolerate mass murder period, right?
Which is another record.
That is a document with all the posters and stuff, which were in the reissues. It's kind of a document of what was happening that month and that week.
Well, do you remember that gig?
And me kind of reflecting on it.
Do you remember that gig in Cologne?
Yeah.
That's kind of an artist town for Germany.
It's kind of what?
Artist town.
Yeah, well, high art. Now, Hamburg was the kind of artist town, yeah.
Okay.
But what I remember a lot about Cologne is, sometimes, I don't know if you get this, Mike, but sometimes after a gig, you're really hyper.
Sure, yeah.
Because you've been kind of sat around all day, and you've got to go out and kind of have your thing, or kind of discharge your energy. I end up in some, like, you know, I end up at some, like, GABA club in Rotterdam, just on my own, banging, or in Japan, or listening to Richie, just in some bass bins, or something, just decompressing, do you know what I mean?
Well, that's what the bourbon's for.
Well, yeah, but I can't. I get a bad hangover. I get a bit leery when I've had a drink. I'm too
no,
big.
No, okay. It's
like
a joke, Mark. That was a joke, Mark. That's a joke. Watt gets to tempt those sometimes too.
Eh?
I get to attempt funny sometimes also. Okay.
But they'll be listening.
If it's brown, it's going down. So anyway, so after the gig, you had to decompress.
Leave the comedy to the English. Rowan Angst to Beam.
Okay, Mr. Beam. So what happened after this gig in Cologne?
So I just went. I just started wandering around. Right. I don't know, and the cell came up, right? And I was in this kind of new sort of, I felt a bit kind of craftwork. I was in this kind of new kind of built kind of straight motorway corners where I was somewhere on the edge of town in like Technoville.
Right? Wow, was that
wandering around?
Yeah, right? They weren't from too far away in Dusseldorf. I found the Kling Klang studio. I went searching. I found it. It's not marked. It's all hidden. They're very mysterious, you know.
Yeah, well, we were gonna get Connie Plank to produce some pop group stuff.
Wow!
I know. So anyway, I was wandering around this thing, and there was no traffic to be seen. It was dawn, right?
Okay.
But it was like one of those Dawn of the Dead films. Two people appeared.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this against Germany, because it happens all over the world. It happens in London. Two people appeared, and this just kind of shows kind of zombification of society back then, you know.
Yeah.
And was like reminiscing about the 70s, and I was going, well, it's people know a lot more now, kind of thing. Anyway, these people were just, I don't know where they were cleaners or going to work or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You could see the road for miles away. There was nothing about, there was a little green man on the crossing. A red man. They stood and they waited for the crossing to change. You could see from my, you know,
they were going to obey the traffic rule. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, Ampelmann, I think they call that little. Well, I think he was in the east, but they still use him in Berlin.
Oh, one's got a hound, isn't he? They got a bear. Right. I've got a lot of time for. I love it. But I like Germany. I lived there for like 3 or 4 years. It's cool, man.
We spent eight hours together in Berlin once.
Fantastic.
It was righteous. Let's listen to Justice from Cologne, 1980. Yeah, but let me tell you this too. It's not just that bass lick. The counterpoint, when they bring in those little harmonics on the guitar. Bing, ding, ding, right. Bang, ding, gong, ding, ding, ding. And then you fade the bass out, and that takes over the end. I mean, that's some sound sculpture. That was beautiful.
And we mixed it up.
At the same time, I mean, we were
18, 19, 20, you know.
I know. I, when you told me that, it blew my fucking mind. And then, at the same time, yeah, Mr. Peach getting killed and people kicked in the balls. And
yeah.
I mean, it's trippy how you brought all that things together.
It's just all I'm doing is I'm saying people say that Why was a kind of poetic album, right? And that How Much Longer is a kind of political album. And I don't understand what the hell they're saying, because I was exactly the same people. And for me,
no,
it's like
not.
Performance art, reading out about what...
It's not exactly, you know,
it's like
the same,
war poems,
though, Mark.
Reading out about what's happening in front of your face is more honest than talking about flowers. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah, but it's not exactly the same. When people ask me the difference, because I get this asked all the time, what's the difference between the two pop group albums? It's the bass players.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Don't overlook that, brother.
All right.
We are not totally expendable people.
You must be schizophrenic. You're speaking on behalf of all the bass players in your head.
To me, that's where I hear the main difference. But you're right; it is the same band, it's the same heart.
I had a song. I had a song on the first album, Why, called "Don't Call Me Pain," and the
that's
lyric
right.
was "Don't Call Me Pain."
I love
my
it.
Name is Mystery.
Love it. Love it.
And that bloody whatever, you know, it's all, you know, whatever.
I love that song. That song is intense. Also, the sequence. Yeah, maybe it is more poetic record. But you know what, Greg Ginn, you know, the Black Flag guy, he loved that album.
Oh, cool.
Can you imagine hardcore being influenced?
No. That is the crazy thing about the pop group. You get these people coming out. It's happening now with all these young kids and dance kids. It's just, I don't know, they just get the openness or something. I'll tell you who I did see. Who was Dick Keith, one of the singers from Black Flag?
He's the first singer, and then he made a
I
band
I saw
called
his band. Is
Circle
it
Jerks. It's called Off Now, the new band, yeah.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah.
I saw him like 4 or 5 years ago. Best thing I've heard for ages.
Oh, well, yeah. I just got to play with him.
Wait, you in his band?
No, I ain't in his band. He's got Jeff from Red Cross on bass.
Wow.
But I got to share a bill with him.
Pardon?
I got to share a bill with him.
Great. That's cool that you guys phone each other and stuff, you know, and everybody starts playing. Yeah, that's cool.
Well, you know, that's why one of the reasons I call it a movement. It's more than one band. It's more than one person. Everybody has their own take, and like we were saying earlier, you don't copy people, but you do get inspired.
Yeah, and you encourage, and people encourage you.
Encourage, that's the
word. Amongst it. It's like a gang. Have you heard of this lot from Detroit? Is it called Pyrolator or something like that?
Pyrolator.
I forgot what the name is. There's a cool lot coming out of Detroit. I forgot what
it's
I've
coming
got.
Out of Detroit.
Yeah,
well, I know Dirt Bombs. They're great.
No, this is recent, very recent. They just played over here at Underclub. I forgot the name, but they're called something like Pyrolator.
Pyrolator. That's a
yeah.
Trippy
I think
name.
I got the name wrong. I'll tell you next time, Mike.
Okay, and I'll check it out. You know, somebody once told me the only thing new is you finding out about it. I think the Residents are touring again, a smaller piece version.
Yeah.
Those guys, you know, they're in their 70s.
Charles, the two Charleses from This Heat started doing a This Heat set called This Is Not This Heat.
This is not Miss Heat?
This Heat.
This
they
Heat.
Were the best band. Charles Hayward.
Oh,
like
I remember This Heat. I remember This Heat. Yeah.
We shared bills with them. They were brilliant. And they helped us with our early sessions. They were like a bit older than us, but we felt close to them. Wicked band.
And what was the label United Dairies? Because there
no,
was a,
United Dairies is something to do with cum transmissions, which is something to do with Robin Crystal.
And something to do with Lemon Kittens.
Yes, Alex.
I love those records. Yeah. They're the most insane records.
Yeah. And then there was a Blood Brother, but what was that? You know, some cool things.
Shockheaded Peters. That's what they turned into.
Shockheaded Peters. Yeah. A friend of mine, that Tony from Berlin was he's doing some more stuff. That Shockhead. Yeah, cool.
Oh man, is that a trip? Okay, hey, we're at the end of the first hour, April 17, 2016, edition WAP Peter Show, special guest Mark Stewart. Hold tight for hour two. April 17, 2016, it's the second hour, the WAP Peter Show.
pointy shoes. I was the man.
You were the man. People out there, we started the second hour off with How Much Longer, which is from the album of the same name, but this is a live version from Cologne in 1980 off this new release, The Boy with Exploding Head.
Whose head exploded.
Yeah, sorry. The boy, I paraphrased. The boys whose head exploded.
Don't get creative on.
Yeah, I know. That was fucked up. That was fucked up. Right. Don't think, boy, do. That's what my pop would say. Okay. Can you tell me about that tune? That tune was a heavy tune.
Well, this, again, is part, for me, my coming of age, right? Yeah. Again, some, you know, whatever. My rite of passage was realizing what planet I was living on, you know, because I don't know if that happens to other people, but suddenly, at a young age, you just, what was going on was there's this amazing journalist here called John Pilger, right?
Yeah.
A kind of activist journalist, right? Yeah. And he was trying, the kind of cool kind of newspaper here is called the Daily Mirror, right? And they've always had campaigning stuff on it. My brother's girlfriend works for it now, right?
Okay.
He was trying to get this stuff published about Pol Pot and Cambodia, right? People knew that the killing fields were going on, but they weren't letting the information out, right? Somehow he got in there, and there were these front covers, and I put on some of the posters and the thing, just these pictures of all these skulls like piled up from Pol Pot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I realised that, you know, people go on holiday to Cambodia. I realised that Cambodia is not that far away, really. You know, and I think what the fuck is going on? America was involved, blah, blah, blah. It was all like, it was the French Empire, French imperialist place, you know. I was just like, what the fuck is going on? And why will nobody read this?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why are people trying to say it's nothing to do with us? It's our fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it just, when people were saying, you know, it came to this, you know, what's the next song? All I had to say was, how much longer do we tolerate mass murder? That's what I have to say. That's what I've got to say now. It's blatant. It's obvious.
Yeah. I think people get kind of confused with this idea that shit can be justified. You were talking about cheap products, you know, justifying certain kinds of behavior in the last hour.
Yeah.
What about the sounds, that bubbling stuff? No.
That's the sauerkraut. That's the foreign food.
But it wasn't you guys.
Bring that chili belt.
Yeah, but it wasn't you guys doing bong hits,
well,
right? Because,
yeah,
you know, we thought. Coming,
I thought it was you.
Yeah, coming from San Pedro, California, we thought you guys were doing bong hits.
That comes from the friction. That was me rubbing against Gareth's hind legs. Bubbling.
Okay.
Well, bubbling knows, I'm not sure. I think they had a wasp. I think they had a little tiny wasp synthesizer, maybe.
Oh, it's not really water. It's a synthesizer. Okay. It's very...
Well, there's a water noise on
there. But the sounds, you know, I got to tell you.
That's the sweat from the fans pogoing.
No, I'm talking about the studio one. The live one, they don't really have.
Oh, the studio one. Oh, yeah, we were doing all sorts of shit. One of the things is we had these children's kind of toys. There's a big plastic, like an air conditioning tube we used to better buy in toy shops. So if you swirl around your head, it kind of goes,
ooh. Oh, yeah, you hear that. Yep.
Yeah, all sorts
it's
of shit.
It's really interesting collage. I mean, there's so much textures in that tune. It's bitching. We're going to play something that's a little earlier. This gig you did in Sheffield. That's Cabaret Voltaire, right? Band, yeah. In 1979, a song called Blind Faith, which, man, that's a hard charger song.
Well, Blind Faith kind of sums up what we were saying about why people give up their destiny to other people or to politicians, this whole kind of, and this blind faith, you know. One of the lyrics in that song is, prophets hunted and imprisoned while uniformed mass murderers become heroes.
Yeah. And that's what I was talking about with Garth's guitar over Dan's bass.
It's not justice.
I fucked up. See, don't ever rely on me as a reliable witness.
Witness?
I always confuse things.
Jehovah's Witness.
Even though I've heard these things billions of times, I still confuse things. I think there's too much competition for space in my head.
Confusion comes fresh.
Okay. So, thank you. That's a good defense.
Confusion, he say. Confucius, he say.
Yeah, right.
That's a good defense. I will use that. Thank you, Mark. Let's listen to Blind Faith. Not the band, but the tune.
Thank you.
Why, for Pedro Show, that was
Justice.
And you know what the last poet said? Yeah, last poet said.
No justice, no peace.
Well, the last poet said just us.
Yes, just us.
Right?
Too right.
Yeah, I just saw a thing on Hustler Convention. Were you influenced by that?
Is that Lightning Rod?
Yeah.
Well, that's he's a good friend of mine. Jalal's wicked. Jalal from the Last Poets. Yeah, have you seen that bit in that glove, Tom, where they're rapping in the scrapyard?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Bruce, the drummer, got to play with the What's Profits for a while.
Wow.
I know. Those guys have, you know, again, it's amazing to be able to work with some of those guys from that period. Legends, one and all.
Much respect, and they're treasures, you know?
Yeah.
And you start taking cats like that for granted, man, get it together, people. Yeah. What can you tell me about that Sheffield gig? What was that? Because it's a steel town.
What was really, really interesting in England at that time was, I remember talking to Bobby Gillespie from Primal Scream.
Right? Yeah, right. The singer.
And you get to hear the kind of influence. For us, the Sex Pistols went round, and every place they played concerts, something kicked off. I mean, the place was ready. There were lots of boys in different towns in England and girls listening to Metallic KO by Iggy and the Stooges, early Dolls, maybe a bit of Music Concrete, but you know, we were all kind of finding out about weird shit on our own or in isolation or one or two people at school, but there was nothing going on really. There was Dr. Feelgood, and we talked about this in the last show.
Sure.
But as soon as you got in a band, right, as soon as we started playing other places, we kind of go somewhere where, and we kind of make friends with, you know, I've been friends with the guys from Cabaret Voltaire since then. Right, Mally, the singer, DJed for us last year before the gig. Working with Richard Kirk, you know, amazing guys, right? And they were going from like 72, 74. And there was some great. There was this band called Vice Versa that came out of there. Chack, the Box, amazing. And then it moved on to Fon and now Warp Records and stuff. Sheffield, Malcolm DJed for us. Mally. Cabaret Voltaire, not Mally. No, be told of.
Mandy, bass player in Primal Scream.
Yeah. Mally from the Stone Roses, yeah. I'm talking about Mally, the singer from Cap.
Oh, yeah. He was in town when I played there last with Paul Smith.
Yeah.
It was a former steel town that turned into a college town. At that time, it was probably starting to close down as a steel town, right?
Yeah, but I'm not sure about this glorification of... I'm not sure about this. I mean, with Detroit, you can... In England, we didn't really... We've got it at the moment. There's a huge steel thing called Port Talbot, right, in Wales, which is closing down. But this kind of, there's more to Sheffield. There was lots of other stuff going on there. There's railways. It was a town before steel.
Okay.
Some of these places, like in Wales, they got the workforce in after the factory was built. It's like a new towns or something. But some of these other towns, there was things going on, and then they diversified into something else, you know.
Right.
A lot of these places, they had cotton mills. There were children working in these factories until the 50s, 40s and 50s. Anyway, blah, 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 blah.
Jesus.
But Sheffield was a one-off. People talk about Liverpool or whatever. Sheffield, somehow, it's where English electronic music, like I was saying, Warp Records, Bleep, all the dance music. It's sure. Sheffield is a kind of hub for that.
Okay.
It's like, if you talk to the techno guys, Derek May, all those, you know, all the Detroit guys, you know, they were listening to Human League, they were listening to Cabaret Voltaire, you know. It's very, very weird that kind of electronic stuff came from like a weird ink town.
You know, I think also Sheffield Def Leppard.
Yeah, well, you would.
Okay. I didn't mean to bring that up, okay?
Where's your poodle?
I didn't mean to bring that up. I heard it was the bass player's band, so, you know, I had to.
What?
Yeah, I heard it
what?
Was.
What?
I heard it. No, that's Iron Maiden.
I'm not.
Somebody told me that one of those bands, the bass player runs it.
The new wave of British heavy metal. They were the enemy back then, mate.
They still are. Don't worry about it. I thought there was a bass player in there, but I'm wrong. It's Iron Maiden.
If I ever meet another cool American musician that I've got to idolize, they start telling me about Cheap Trick and blow their whole.
You know what Cheap Trick reminded me of? The two.
Here we go again.
Yeah, the two funny guys, the two good-looking guys. That's Slade.
Yeah.
Slade many years before
Slade
Cheap Trick.
Band. They got groomed into becoming a skinhead band. They were getting nowhere. They had a manager who said, it's pretty skinhead. You've got just like, they were called Ambrose Slade. Then he dressed them up as skinheads and they had a hit. Oh, the Arrows. They were cool.
That shows to go you about the clothes thing. Okay, so what about Forces of... Now, Forces of Oppression, that's the first song on the studio album.
Yeah.
And this is coming from a Cologne gig. I know that song came from a bass lick.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, what, Oakland?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's some man that starts on the album version off a cassette.
Yeah.
And he's talking about some kind of macho.
Underground, yeah.
Some problems with the movement of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, again, your young man being aware of things.
Yeah, it's a reflection on... But that is a kind of unity, because again, when you talk about a movement now, and for me, you talk about a movement of musicians or whatever, but for me, there's
well, I was meaning more the movement in Oakland in the 60s, the Panther movement.
Yeah. But now, for example, I feel that there's a huge kind of silent majority of people who are kind of aware, they can see through the mirror and aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of conscious collective, you know, it's really big. And that is to do with the spread of, that is to do with music.
Yeah.
Right? That has to do with the spread of the internet and kind of cool sites on the internet and a kind of antidote of different information. Because back in the day, information was even more under control. There were denotices and, you know, there was strict control of what we were taught at school, what we were allowed to read in the newspapers, what we could see on the telly.
Yeah.
So now there's like a real, and people aren't really aware of this. And a lot of the politicians are kind of 20 years out of date. They don't really know what's behind the screens. They don't really know it's a bunch of hippies that built the internet and are running a lot of these cool companies that are running the world. You know what I mean? It's like, there's a lot of secret agents actually inside the system at the moment, and the old guard have got no idea what's going on. They're arguing about Cold War concepts that were wrong in the first place.
Yeah.
They're badly educated.
Yeah.
And they lack any kind of hope or vision, while the cool people are just getting on and building something new, you know? It's weird. That's why I'm quite hopeful and optimistic.
Yeah, me too. But I am also a little curious about some things I first heard 35 years ago. What is the Column 88?
That's a right-wing... That's a extreme right wing group in England.
Is that right? Because you juxtapose it against Return of the Panthers.
Yeah.
I had no clue.
Yeah. Well, in that week, again, in the week I was writing
about this stuff,
I've
been waiting 35 years to ask you that.
With
I've been waiting 35 years.
Had actually regrouped that, different guys, but the Panthers had actually. There was a problem going on, a housing problem or something, and they'd actually restarted and just as I was writing that stuff. Okay. Have you seen that film that came out last month?
Which film?
About the Panthers.
No.
Some PBS, cool, they showed it over here, it's a cool film, man.
You mean there was an English wing of the Black Panther Party?
No. I'm talking about right and left. I'm talking about different things that were, it's a montage of what was happening, it's like a newspaper, it's different things. I said... Column 88, right?
Yeah, right.
And then the Return of Panthers was against...
Yeah.
It's oppositional.
Right. I understand that. Not now. I never knew who Column 88 was. Where were they located?
They're English. English right-wing group.
An English right-wing group. And then a Black Power group from Oakland, California. So you're juxtaposing the two... Okay.
No, it was just something that was happening that week. I was just throwing in, you know, I was just saying, something happened, Column 88, they were involved in something. Then I just thought it was interesting that the Return of the Panthers was going. It's part of the cut-up.
Well, to me, you nail it at the end when you say self-defense is no offense.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's something where you could turn a phrase like Lightning Rod could do in the Last Poets.
Yeah.
They're really amazing. The extreme mix on the drums with that compression. Yes. I mean, that hi-hat, that is so wild. Now,
it was very Mike back then. They're
different now, producers, right?
The look we get from some of these engineers, right? Because I'm working in the pit. Not just my bank account, but I live on the edge.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I drive people mad in social situations and stuff, whatever. But come in the studio, we're doing things that you're not, you know, are you not meant to, it's all my job's worth, you're going to break all my speakers and all, but I know in that red bit, and when you overload ferric oxide and stuff, when, even in mastering, you can cut, you can get a lot more density.
Yeah.
Well, me and Adrian Sherwood would call it supersonics, or, you know, you can get a lot more inside that density than people think. And you can actually, you know, you can create chaos where on right, going right to the edges, and then it bounces, you know.
Totally. Look, can I tell you a true story?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to record Double Nickels on the Dime. The Minuteman. Actually, we didn't know it was going to be a double album yet, but we start recording. And the thing we bring in to the producer man, the engineer man, Ethan James, who's keyboard player for Blue Cheer later.
Oh, wow.
After V Vail. And the song, you know, we're trying to use words of what we heard. And he's just giving us the Marty Feldman eyes, you know. And so, okay, Ethan, we'll go get the, we bring the record in, we play him that song.
Words by the Pop Group.
It's called Forces of Oppression.
Oh, right, the song you're playing.
We play that song for him, and we said, is there a way we can, again, he looked at us, we still got the Marty Feldman eyes, but he said, okay, I think I know what you mean. Right. We ended up with 48 songs, right? He mixed all of them in one night.
Great.
So, just to show us to go, yeah. Now,
open-minded dude.
Yeah. Well, open-minded, I think you had to be. You got to understand, punk movement here was very small. So you only had kind of true believers in it. There was some jive, but there wasn't a lot of merch success. So the people into it were into it. They didn't have a lot of carpet bagging yet. They were still with the new waivers.
I saw a great documentary about Chicago. As Dave Grohl made it, of all things. He's doing this thing, The Sound of the Cities or something, where he's traveling around different cities. But he got Albini and a load of the guys from Chicago to talk. Brilliant documentary about all the interplay with all the different bands in Chicago. Brilliant.
Yeah, the Chicago had an interesting scene. You know, they're actually the big town of the Midwest. Everybody thinks it's the coast. But if you're in the mid, I think a great drummer from England lives there, Martin Atkins.
Yeah, and also the guy from Philly Tribe who was going to ministry with Alan. Yeah.
Oh, and John from Mekons.
Yeah, Wax Trax. Because the thing is, I was doing a gig in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and supposedly some of my solo stuff inspired a lot of this industrial stuff, right?
Yeah.
But after the gig, I just went out of the cab and said to the, I was trying to decompress again. I just said, where's the late drink? He took me into this tiny little bar, and there was a DJ behind the thing, right?
Yeah.
With DJ Pierre. It was his own little thing, and it was kind of the very early acid house stuff, right? Acid tracks, they called it, right? What we called it, washing machine house, right? And I came back to England raving about this stuff. I was like the only white, you know, there was only about four people in this little bar, right?
Right.
And then about a year later, it kicked off, and that was it's great to be able to walk in on a few scenes. I don't know if you've had that in your lifetime. You know, I was 13 when Bowie happened, 15, 16 when punk happened, saw techno, saw post-punk. You know, mental being in the middle of just witnessing some of these things.
Well, for the listeners, we're going to have Forces of Oppression live happen right now.
Forces of Oppression, Gewalttätiger Unterdrückung. Thank you.
collect. My whole thing is I just take little snippets, like little kind of sways or something, and try and...
I think the French word is...
Put some thrash metal against some booty bass line. You know, that's what I do.
I think the French word is pastiche.
Pastiche, okay. Collage.
But you know what? You said that. You know that thing that you said, I'm not a musician.
You know, say that again?
You know who told me that? Tav Falco. Tav Falco. And I couldn't believe that, because to me, he's like musician of highest order.
I know.
So that's interesting when people think of their own work.
Yeah. I don't think of it. I don't think of it as work. I mean,
work. I meant
to analyze yourself. That's the closest way to go mad.
I didn't mean the noun work. I meant work, the verb.
I don't know what that is. Never done it.
Verbs do things, things. Verb is doing,
work,
and noun is things.
Four-letter word.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting all like Einstein on your ass, okay?
I didn't go to college, mate. You're wearing a blazer, aren't you?
Yeah, but I went to college for technical.
It's a monocle.
I got a monocle. I got the tunic.
Sherlock Watts, yeah. I presume.
Sorry, yeah. And I guess you're Nigel Bruce, right?
Who's Nigel Bruce when he's home?
He played Watson, right?
We didn't get that band over here.
We didn't get that band. No, there are no spectators. We're going to play this again from the Cologne gig.
There are no spectators on the Mark Watts show.
So,
there's no list either.
I mean, this, but you didn't phrase it as a question. That's a statement, right?
Again. It's open-minded. I mean, I'm working of this idea of a... There's this band I really liked from the States called Adult, right? And the whole... It was all in lowercase, but there was a dot, like a full stop after the lowercase adult. And this little dot is the most interesting thing. So, yeah, like a... Well, it's a girl thing. But it's Peter Saville, when he designed all the Joy Division. Again, it's a graphic conceit, right? Yeah. So I'm working of this kind of upside down question mark. You remember question mark and Mysterians?
Absolutely, from Michigan, Mexican
shit
Michigan.
Shit like that. Gets me going. You know. So it's not necessarily a statement. Again, it could be a question. It could be a joke.
Yeah. Great.
I think comedy has got a lot to do with things, and for me, a lot of English punk rock was about taking the piss in quite a heavy way, but kind of be able to laugh at the same time. Otherwise, a fight would break out.
All right, and that I'm thinking about the studio version. There was water sounds and that stuff too.
Yeah,
that's got a kind of collage, kind of a landscape. That's not driven.
We recorded that with Frank Sinatra on the throne.
That's it.
Not Frank Sinatra, Frank Zappa.
Frank Zappa.
The poster people used to have on their walls of Frank Zappa sat on the throne.
Yeah. Frank Zappa on the throne.
Are you still sporting that Zappa-esque mustache?
I'm clean shaven. But
I was talking about you.
I'm shaving Haven. Right. Keep the motor clean. Hey. I always figured you for more Captain Beefheart than Frank Zappa, and that's the way I am.
We knew about Captain Beefheart. That is the weirdest thing. Me and Gareth were both saying that. We didn't know about it.
But you knew about Frank Zappa?
No.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. No. Because to me, Frank Zappa is much different than Captain Beefheart.
I like his writings and his art and stuff, but that is the funniest thing, because do you see this footage of this film?
Yeah.
Right? With the DVD with the boys whose head exploded, right?
Yeah.
If you see that, you will see that we're basically pasty faced little teenagers.
Yeah.
Just jumping up and down. Like I said, if people see this, it will blow our cool, because over the years this whole myth has developed, and theorists and writers have made more of it to a certain extent. Obviously, it is heavy in it, but it becomes you must have it with your stuff. It becomes something else.
Yeah.
Which you can't see.
Yeah. You become a construct.
You become a construct, and people are asking you questions about something which a journalist invented later. You know, anyway, and there's revisions and whatever.
I gotta be honest, Mark, when we heard it, the closest thing we could think was Beefheart with Parliament. I mean, to be honest, but that's where we were coming from. didn't know you guys. We never saw you live. That's where we were coming from. So, of course, we're bringing our own story to it. We were way into Beefheart. And here, somebody put that with Parliament just because they wanted to. We thought that was so liberating.
Yeah, well, so did some cool journalists here, like Richard Williams, the editor of Melody Maker and stuff. And so they immediately, and they thought we knew all these things, but we didn't know Beefheart, but we knew, like I'm saying, we were really into, like, Albert Ayler, the On the Corner Miles, like, you know, and like crazy kind of cutter, any kind of offshoot of Clinton, any kind. But I was a funk fanatic from the age of 11 and 12 from clubbing and stuff. So, you know, I'm going to make a funk radio show the other day. I don't know all the stories or stuff, but I know bass lines. Do you know what I mean?
Sure, absolutely.
And reggae and stuff. So we're proper kind of music heads, but we don't know the whole universe. And Gareth brings in all sorts of different, like I'm saying, when we were kids, we'd walk home from school, we'd save up, you get some bus fare for your mum and dad because the schools were right across town, right? If you walked home, on the way home, there'd be these junk sort of bookshop record shops. The books just come out about one in Britain called Revolver, and then they have a second-hand section, right? Yeah. And like you said, when you saw the cover of Y, and you just liked the cover, right?
Yeah, right.
Me and Gareth would buy like these weird electronic music compilations from like the 50s of like, you know, Martin Sputnik and so, you know, these weird, just because the covers were weird. And we'd go home and just listen to like Walter Carlos and these weird blip blop, blip blop.
Later, Wendy kind of, Carlos.
Let's do a bit of that in that, you know what I mean?
Sure, sure. We had a radio station, well, we still have, it's called KPFK, it's listener supported. And they had a show called Tesseract, and they would play a Carl Stone. Had an imaginary landscape. They played John Cage. I heard this stuff. It was nothing I saw at the Arena Rock gigs, I tell you.
Yeah.
It was very liberating.
Yeah, completely.
Let's play There Are No Spectators.
Take time.
Says voice, just as he says, a psychic moment. A psychic radio, wow. Not psychic TV.
Well, you know, I've been talking with management there, and we prepared that for you. Not true. People, we just heard there are no spectators, and we're talking about this idea.
But this food, this food I'm eating, have you put some tablets in? One flew over the one cuckoo's nest.
Oh, wow. She spiked your chow, huh? That's what we called it, the electric Kool-Aid acid test. Oh, by the way, I saw maybe The Guardian had some article on they did brain scans during
the road trip when people are taking mushrooms.
Right. And
I heard this most amazing theory about mushrooms and cave paintings.
Bring it.
Came out of Terence McKenna or something. They're saying the prehistoric man, when he first ate psilocybin mushrooms, he became kind of intellectual or became aware of his mind. Right? It opened the doors, stopped us being animals and gave us the power of thought. Right? And then it said these arrows on the walls in prehistoric society or are actual mushrooms, and it's telling you where the mushrooms are. Right, and they're saying, and there's how this arrow of the which was if it's upright, it's a psilocybin mushroom. It looks like a little arrow, right?
Sure,
the size of it. How that was changed into a cross.
Oh yeah, you straightened it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, and what these scans show that the sense of connectedness, the brain actually is connecting things. The activity when the
cells... opens up synapses, it grows. You can see the synapses lighting up like a tree, like a Christmas tree lighting up. You can see it grows your brain, supposedly.
Yes. Oh, wow. I've read stuff from Terence McKenna. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was, I think his last years were in Hawaii.
Okay.
Very interesting cat. And stuff about shaman and...
Yeah, there was a really cool American magazine, again, called Mondo 2000, which a guy called Are You Serious used to run it. Amazing stuff, just amazing articles by techno shaman, grey stuff.
Grey stuff, yeah.
You got some great radio stations over there, man.
Yeah, Pacifica, the first one started in San Francisco, Bay Area.
And the KUSF in Exile, you got the one in New York, great radio stations, and magazines. That's what I'm saying. I really missed like Mondo 2000, that research thing I used to love,
Viva.
There's one thing that I really like. A friend of mine, Adam Paffrey, is running a thing called, what's his thing called? It's not Emma. He's got a really cool press in, don't run this bit, Mike, but he's got a great printing house. He puts out amazing stuff.
Adam Paffrey.
Anyway,
I can't remember either. But I just was with V-Vale up in the city there, and
is he all right?
Yeah, still doing the research. That guy's
same
going strong.
Me, man.
Yeah, I love the man. He's a treasure. He was the first keyboard player for Blue Cheer.
Right.
By the way, now Feed the Hungry, again from the Cologne gig.
Sunday lunch.
Sunday lunch.
That was the message to my mom.
Okay.
Went up to my high chair.
Okay. Here we go.
Of Argentina.
start again. You're saying primary school is grade school, right?
It's from 5 till 11.
Okay, yeah, we would call it, yeah, like grade school here. And you're saying they had school dinners?
Yeah, they had free school dinners.
So is dinner at nighttime? Here,
no, lunchtime. We call dinner lunchtime here.
Oh, okay. So you had a free lunch.
Free lunch, right?
Okay. And you were growing really fast. You're 6'7" now.
Yeah. But I was so hungry, right? That I'd wait. I'd have my three course dinner, right? And then I'd wait, and the serving ladies, the dinner ladies, would took pity on me, and they'd bring me out the whole trays, right? So for a couple of years, I had a school record. I had 14 first courses and 15 puddings.
Jesus,
like,
Christ.
In one day. I was just like, I was carnivorous. I was just consuming. I'm trying to make a joke, the feed hungry and stuff like that, but in fact, no, it's about 10,000 men, women, and children dying of starvation every day.
And you're talking about 15 puddings, okay.
Yeah. No.
Are you laughing at my political songs? Are you laughing at starving babies? My. What was that crash song, Pictures of Starving Babies?
Right, I remember that. Yeah, that
she
was...
She just died, vips averse, they got the poison girls.
She did? Oh, I'm so sorry. They were older people, huh, in that band?
Yeah, they were older, but they're called Crass, they're called Man Penny's.
Yeah,
cool.
Crass, right.
Great graphics.
Somebody told me, the
Crass graphics, like the Dead Kennedys, those montages are brilliant.
You know what? I've heard that some of those artists for the Crass people influenced the Banksy guy.
Yeah, of course.
Or he was...
Banksy's in Bristol, but Banksy's part of our posse. We played Dismal Land.
Oh, Banksy's wow. I drove past that on tour.
Banksy could make some massive 3D for massive attack. He's from Bristol.
Okay, but where was Crass from? Did they live on a commune or something?
Yeah, they spotted a place in Epping Forest outside of London. They've owned it now. They've been squatting it for so long. They got some sort of cheap sheep hoarders kind of squatting right.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool okay. Shit. Steve Ignorant's doing some cool shit. Tony Rambo's doing really great stuff.
I heard that Steve Ignorant is like a volunteer fireman or something.
Yep.
That's
have
crazy.
You heard the Sleaford Mods?
Yeah, the rapper guy with the...
Yeah.
Yeah, really good. Really good. What, you think they're in that tradition also? Okay.
Well, no. Just thought we did a split single with them. They're great. They were one of the best things
happening. The pop group is making a single with the...
We did one. With Nations from the last pop, from Citizen Zombie. We did a split single with the Mods, and we've done a few good mates with them. Yeah, great people.
Now, they don't mean mods like, you know...
Well, I don't exactly know what they mean.
Okay.
Mods, but back in the day, in your local park, you know, after school, you go and play in some garages behind your house.
Sure.
And you have, like, Canvey Island Mods or Bristol Skins. There were four skinhead gangs. I was kind of affiliated to King Smooth Boot Boys, right? And then there's Red Lanagra Merchants, you know, you'd write up all around your neighborhood.
And what's Teddy?
What's what?
Teddy?
Teddy Boys.
Yeah, because
Teddy Boys.
In the stupid movie with Sting, they fight the Mods.
Oh, yeah, they're the Rockers.
Okay.
The Rockers were the motorbike boys who were like, I took them from the Teddy Boys.
And that's Teddy Boy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Mods are more like...
Motorbikes. The Mods were like the 60s Who kind of people.
And Scooters. And
scooters with those mirrors on.
Okay.
They're the Jam.
And this was it a class thing? It was a clothes thing. They're both from the working class, right?
Of course, of course. Clothes and music.
Well, they always say in the U.S., England's got such a class system. And over here, it's clothes. But in England, it was clothes too.
Yeah, it's completely clothes, from what I know. You know, yeah.
Okay. Interesting about that.
And the skinheads, the original skinheads, were loved reggae music.
Yeah, you know, right. 12, and ska,
you know,
right?
And I chatted to these old Jamaican musicians, and they were living in Jamaica. They didn't know what was going on, but they were making these, they made these records, Skinhead Moonstomp, with skinhead in the titles, but because they heard that people would buy it. They didn't know that, you know.
The racial thing.
No, they didn't know that, they didn't understand. No, it didn't become racial until later on. It was a second generation, a second wave of skinheads that became... The original skinheads copied the Rude Boys, you know.
Okay.
The Jamaican Rude Boys. Weird.
Oh, talk about weird. It got to the point where you had to look at the guy's boot laces to know what kind of skinhead.
Yeah.
This is later on, like in the 80s and 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, you got that with hip-hop as well. I mean, the funniest thing when hip-hop... we were in New York, and I heard like early hip hop stations in on Kiss FM and WBLS in New York when we were playing No Wave clubs with the pop group and the Gang of Four. Right, I brought the tapes back to Bristol, and the kind of hip hop thing kicked off in Bristol alone. Really, didn't London was unaware of it, right? And
you guys played with the Gang of Four.
That were bringing over rappers and stuff from New York, right? But the funniest thing is, in the dugout, this club, the hip hop club we had in Bristol, you were talking to somebody, and they were looking at your feet. I thought, why did they look at my feet all the time? But it was how you tied your laces.
Okay.
The weave of the laces, and how fat they were. They'd iron their laces.
I gotta tell you, I have a special way I like lace my tennis shoes.
Dude.
Yeah, I don't use X's.
I'm not talking about tennis.
I ain't talking about tennis. I'm talking about sneakers. That's a kind of shoe. It's a shoe. I'm not talking about the game. Tennis shoe, sneakers. Sneakers, okay? I don't lace my sneakers with X's. I have them go across like ladders, and that's much different.
Right.
But I don't do it to belong to anybody. I do it because it puts less pressure on the fucking arch.
You're so arch.
So arch.
You have to show me how to do that, David.
I will give you the secret technique. Now, yep. You said something I want to ask you about. You guys played with the Gang of Four?
Yeah.
I didn't know you guys were contemporaries.
Of course.
I thought you guys were before them.
We were before them, but when they started, when they started playing in London, they blew up really quickly. And we shared bills with them and did benefits and stuff. Yeah, there's a kind of a famous gigs we played with them, yeah.
But where are they from? They're from Leeds or something?
New York and Philadelphia and stuff. We were the guy from Sonic Youth was saying that, you know, I was in New York for quite a long period, straight from school, because they loved us in the Gang of Four. Hurrahs, Danceteria, Tier 3, Mud Club, you know.
Yeah.
Fat Five Freddy.
Well, what happened was they kept going and you guys quit.
Yeah. Now, I was back in the States doing my solo stuff anyway, you know, and then I started working with the New Yorkers as still guys, you know.
Yeah, right, Mafia.
Yeah.
But Gang of Four, they were Leeds, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and they were quite radical, you know, they're cool, man. I remember they sent us their first cassette.
Okay.
Cool. And they had a cool label, Fast. Bob
yeah,
Fast,
that's
cool
that's the record I had by them. It was a little red record with three songs.
That's great.
Actually, there was a lot of good Fast records.
Yeah,
they also
Opez was for the same scene who played at this Alexandra thing the film's from. Yeah, yeah.
They put out these compilations called Earcom.
Yeah, and it had a similar sort of industrial kind of factory safety video, safety poster things that Mute used a bit later on, you know. Great, great, great graphics.
And that label was out of Leeds too?
I think Bob was actually Scottish.
Okay.
Bob Fosse, but it was a lot of Leeds bands, yeah, yeah.
Delta 5?
Delta 5, yeah. Bev, she was late. Delta 5 played at the, Delta 5 were from Leeds. Delta 5 played at the Alexander thing that the gigs from, that the DVDs from, yeah. Good mates.
But there's no real connection.
Guitar bass player.
But there's no, two bassists, right? And ladies. Yeah. But there's no real connection between Bristol and Leeds. You guys both met in London.
No, when we were doing concerts, like I'm telling you, in Sheffield.
Oh, the circuit, the circuit.
We'd say hi, or we'd give them a first support.
I understand.
Everybody supported each other in those days.
Sure,
you were chatting to somebody at the bar, like Ian Curtis in Manchester.
Sure.
And he'd say, kids from Joy Division would come and say how much you like the stuff, and then their manager, then we knew Tony Wilson from Factory Records was putting on early gigs, you know.
Okay, yeah, I understand.
It's a small scene.
Yeah, it's a scene, and a kind of a circuit that's not run by the big boys.
Yeah, really, there was like really nothing.
I try to explain to those people, because you were talking about Clash and Jam, Stranglers, they're all in the big labels. What you guys were doing is a lot more like what we were doing in the U.S.,
Yeah, because the independent scene had started by then. The Clash and the Jam were the first wave, really.
Yeah,
the Jam was a bit later on, and they had to sign to majors. There wasn't really any kind of independent sense. But at the time, I was living with a girl, and upstairs, Jeff Travis was renting a room. He had a Rough Trade record shop, but he was talking about putting out independent singles. He put out one single, Mr. Bassman, a reggae single, wasn't it, right? And then very quickly, a little room above the record shop at Rough Trade became a kind of hub. Daniel Miller from Mute had a little table. Scott Welling had a little table. All these different people were starting to kind of do their own things underneath the kind of distribution umbrella. So,
okay.
Originally, we were on Radar, which was like set up by the guy from UA, which was kind of like, it was independent within a major structure. It was a cool guy that ran it, but it was still within the kind of that kind of more, you know, corporate structure. But as soon as there was, I really got on with Jack, and as soon as there was an independent scene, immediately we set up our own Y Records in distribution. And that distribution hooked up with people in Italy, and there was a trade in San Francisco, and the whole thing started to grow, you know.
Sure, sure. We're at the end of the second hour, April 17, 2016. Special guest, Mark Stewart. I hang tight for hour three. April 17, 2016. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show. Pedro show started the third hour off with another tune from Cologne, or Coon, if you live there, 1980.
Cologne.
No. Actually, this gig was from the Milano one at the Disco 2000.
Milano.
And it was called Rob a Bank. We're Robin Hood.
Occupied.
Yeah. Running through the wood with his merry men. And now the studio, there's a trumpet. Is that Garth?
No, Gareth. It's a friend of ours from Bristol. We're on to make a band called Mouth. No, I don't think. I'm sure that's not Gareth. It's just a mate who played trumpet.
But Gareth got into sax.
Gareth is beyond it. Gareth was into sax before. I think Gareth was playing sax before piano. I mean, my best friend in Bristol, right?
I grew up with,
and I spent a lot of time with him still, who formed a neighbour in the same studio, formed the Cortinas, the first Bristol punk band, right. And the pop group. Formed going up, we were just mates of the Cortinas from school and stuff. We formed going up to the Roxy Club, the Cortinas. We thought the name is Gareth and Bruce and stuff in the van going up to the Roxy. Yeah, a lot of people picked up a sax because of Andy Mackay in Roxy Music.
Ah,
the
Andy
sax
Mackay,
was a cool instrument.
Yeah.
And Andy Mackay directs very, very cool. He looked a bit like a teddy boy.
Yeah, he had that kind of haircut with the sideburns.
And Shannon Up, we were getting into Shannon Up, remember them?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Get a job.
Yeah. American Graffiti, that film.
American Graffiti. Hey, they're at Woodstock.
Wolfman Jack. That's who you remind me of, Mike. Wolfman Mike from Pedro.
When I first came to Cali from Virginia, he was on the radio, AM radio. I listened to that guy talk all the time. He had a show. The Mexican stations had X's. You know that ZZ Top song, Heard It on the X? They had no limitations to their power. So they had 200,000 watt stations, and Wolfman Jack was one.
200,000 watts from Pedro.
How would you like that in your ear?
Bad night.
So, Rob, whose idea was the trumpet?
That's the mushrooms.
It was the mushrooms. Okay.
What do you call a mushroom at a party?
I don't know.
Fun guy.
Yeah. You're the fun guy.
Funky, get it?
Yeah, I get it. The fun guy.
And you got a laughing button. And you got hand laughter.
I'm laughing with all my heart, from the bottom of my bowels. Okay.
That's that watery noise.
Fun guy. It's that water.
It's coming from you guys.
I'm too close to the water.
Hey, it's the bowel noises.
By the way, where are you calling from in England?
Oh,
what town? No, what's the town?
I'm in London at the moment.
Oh, you are in London. Because I heard that you're living out in kind of parts remote.
I'm all over the place. Wherever I lay my hat, I get sent out to the insanatorium now and again.
Have you been to this...
Let me use the phone there, mate.
Have you been to this town that's east of there? I guess it's called Essex. But the town's called Ramsgate?
Yes. That's where Adrian lives. Yes.
I was just going to say that.
Played at the musical, yeah.
I played the gig.
The legendary gig. The town has never been the same, Mike.
Wow, really good people, man. I had a good time.
Yeah.
And they told me some cats, actually, they're building a train line so more people can get there, I guess, or something they were telling me. But I hope that don't ruin things. Okay. This song here, there was a band, a contemporary of yours in Bristol called Glaxo Baby? Maybe
yes.
Mr. Katsis is from there, right?
Mr. Dan Katsis, yeah.
And, cause we're gonna play this song from, the Cologne gig called Shake the Foundation. And was that one of theirs?
Yes, that's one of theirs.
This is a cover song. This is a cover song.
Well, kind of, because we tried to work this out yesterday. It's probably the same in your hometown. Bands were kind of swapping members, and there was kind of like incest between different bands and stuff, right?
Sure.
And what happened was the pop group was quite of its own. We didn't really feel kind of, there wasn't, you know, we were kind of a bit into it and doing our own thing and taking influences a lot from other places, from outer space, Sun Ra or whatever, right? And, so Simon, the first bass player, who was like my best friend way back to the clubbing
days. He ended up making a band called Pig Bang.
Yeah, he was the funk man. As he got more and more into his bass. The problem is with a lot of musicians, being a vocalist, growing up with your mates, people pick up an instrument, you know, we say, you're going to be the bass player, you're looking sniffing glue, and there are three chords. Paul from The Clash had stickers on his bass, you know, that whole punk thing of having a go, right? From just being mates. Suddenly you realise, oh, they're starting to think they can play the bloody thing.
Right? Oh, yeah, musician.
Yeah, they start growing mustaches.
Oh, with a capital M.
Shows. Do you know what I mean?
And with a capital M. And, when I saw them, actually, when Black Flag and Minutemen was in at the 100 Club, there was a day off, and we saw Pig Bag at the Marquee, and they were wearing pinstripe, like, Chicago gangster suits.
Yeah.
It was quite funny.
Yeah. So this is... To a certain extent, this is kind of why the pop group broke up, even, right?
Whoa.
Because I don't know if you've got to understand it kind of a singer's perspective, right? The thing is, I can understand your mates kind of playing a few chords and making a racket and being punk rock, right? But as soon as they start like becoming learning how to play the instrument, they want to kind of jam and kind of go into outer space and kind of they can play with each other for hours. And there's nothing you can do because they're changing rhythm, they're changing.
Right. It's like trying to dance.
I went to an improvisation course once in Berlin, a free jazz improvisation course, supposedly for vocalists, right? And the bloke said, I'm going to pull a yellow flag out. When I pull a yellow flag, go, googly. It was the funniest thing. I went with this black techno mate of mine. It's just like the craziest thing you've ever seen. I never want to improvise. I'm not fucking Damo Suzuki from Cannes. I can't stand on one leg and yodel. That's not me, Mike.
Exactly. I know what you mean.
So I can't
it's like trying to...
When they start noodling and going
yeah,
off...
Yeah, it's like...
Why do fucking musicians nod at each other and then play a riff back and then nod?
I know for a front man who's not operating a machine, it's trying to like dance on a rug that's moving. It's crazy. It's insane. And I remember Perry telling, look, guys not operating a machine have a different relationship. They just do. They're kind of a bridge to the people, but they're also kind of like a conductor. They get the big picture. And the machine operators get too self-involved with their machines.
Yes.
And like Perry once told me, my bass for me is just a sound, and not even that, it's something I feel.
This is Perry Farrell.
Yeah. Yeah. He, in his mind, it's not parts, it's not riffs. And I totally understand what he means. And I think, really, to get above being some kind of technocrat, you got to get that kind of understanding. Because at the end of the day, it's a connection device. It's not made to drive people away and say, look at my specialness. It's supposed to be inclusive.
Yes.
So I think it's good to get the big picture. So Simon had to leave the band to form his own because...
It's a very long question, but I understand and it happened again towards the end of the band. And if you listen to Garrison later on, Rip, Big, and Panic, for example, more kind of out there.
The album God I had.
It's really out there, and the vocals are kind of adding to the freakiness of the music, like Nanitarian, whatever. Do you know, it's freer, which is great.
Yeah.
I've got no problem with it.
But I remember one song was called Knee Deep in Shit.
Yeah.
And it sounded like that. But then there was also stuff where Nina sang.
Yeah. But anyway, so people were really getting into their instruments and jam, and they were making crazy music. And the best pop group stuff is when it's kind of harnessed and...
It's got a groove.
It's got a groove, and I unlock that groove and put a chorus and some chants into it, make it into some kind of... The stuff... What we did when we started making basic kind of pop songs, like even kind of glam rock kind of Beach Boy songs, to start off with... And then you can freak them out once you've got solid bass. And we're doing this new stuff now. Underneath, you wouldn't believe it because it's going to sound crazy at the end. Yeah. But the basic structure is like a kind of J-pop song with harmonies and everything. People go mad. They say, why are you destroying such brilliant shit, right?
Right.
But if you've got a solid structure to start off with, then you can freak out. It's like freaking out in a padded cell. You've got something to bounce off the walls against. If you start with craziness, you can't really rein it in. You know?
Yeah. And right? I think...
So that is the kind of tension of the pull of the pop group. So, I don't even know why I stopped doing this.
No, because we're getting at the heart of Shake the Foundation.
Simon more rhythmic kind of instrumental music, and he's still a really good mate and whatever, and he's like, he's made some friends in Cheltenham, and we were all like banging on a fence, and it became more kind of, it's interesting stuff. But, I couldn't sing over bloody Art Ensemble of Chicago. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But you got to admit that Papa has a brand new pig bag. That's got a groove.
Massive groove. But it hasn't got any singing,
Yeah, that's an instrumental.
That's the interesting thing about the Dudes. When I came and saw you guys, that you played in that place where they kept that kind of prison, they kept Rudolf Hess.
Rudolf Hess, in, Spandau. Right? They tore it down
Spandau,
after he hung
Spandau
himself.
Ballet. You played with Spandau. How long were you in Spandau Ballet?
About a week.
No.
They said I wasn't dressed right, Mark. I didn't get to do it.
So, but when you played in Spandau, right?
Yeah. They didn't want any Levi's.
Listen to me. There was a noise limitation, right? And I think you had Steve McKay playing sax, right?
We did have a noise limitation. Big
right, time. So it was this noise limitation. So that was the first time I'd ever heard the Stooges a bit quieter. And suddenly, I realized their place in the kind of ESP label kind of free jazz thing, because when you hear the Stooges quiet, there's all this weird interplay between sax and the guitars, and it sounds quite free jazzy. It's you could put it next to an Albert Ayler thing. If Albert Ayler was really loud and the riffs were a bit heavier, there's a lot of free jazz in that production on the Stooges.
Well, you know what Ig asked. We lost Brother Steve last fall.
Yeah,
very sad. And anyway, he told me when Ig first brought him in for the funhouse, he said, "I want Maceo Parker on acid."
Wicked. They said that, Iggy.
Ig said that. Yeah, yeah. Because those cats, they were way into that. There's a song that, Upper Egypt, Lower Egypt. That's Little Doll. That's a bass line, Pharoah Sanders. These guys listen to that stuff. A lot of it was from this guy.
You introduced me to Iggy at that gig, and that filmmaker filmed some of it, right?
Right,
and
totally.
Iggy was saying to me, because I was talking about dance music, he's going, people don't realize it. I was going to Tamla Motown clubs. I was in the, they separate you and put you in this box. He's going, I'm from fucking Detroit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's Tamla. It's R&B we were into. It's mad.
Yeah.
I hate the way people separate stuff, dance music from music.
It's terrible.
Like going back to the old race
charts. It's a real crime. I hate it.
Horrible.
And get this. TVI's got that one snare on the one thing like Motown has. You use the same drum beat and rob a bank. Tap, 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 tap. Yeah, music. it's rhythm notes, it's feelings, it's expression. You know, this genre stuff, it's marketing device and also segregation.
Yeah.
And I really hate it.
So
let's get back to Shake the Foundation and the Black Soul Babies.
Yeah, so there was a lot of interplay and incest between the bands. So when Simon said he wanted to go and do something else, we said, fine, you know, the pop group is a kind of open door.
Sure.
Right? It's, and everybody has a right to whatever they played on or whatever, but it's, we're not, it's basically, it came from a group of mates before it was a band anyway, just people playing ping pong in a youth club, do you know what I mean?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
We didn't decide we were musicians and wanted to kind of out-tever each other. So anyway, basically, so, you know, and Simon said he was going to do Pig Bang. We said, oh, fine, you know. And I'd seen Dan Katsis molesting a guitar with a dildo, right? Yeah. With the Glaxo, with the early version of the Glaxo Babies. I thought,
what were Glaxo Babies like? I never got to see.
He had a beard. Body in the punk days with a beard, right?
Oh, I had to go. Mark, I had to go through that because I wore a beard in the early punk days and I took.
Respect.
I took a lot of blows for that, especially with flannel and Levi's. There was a lot of San Francisco in that look. But anyway, so Dan was another brave brother then. Because for those days, beards were not in. I always wonder what Glaxo Babies were like live, because I never got to see them.
Well, they're playing again. They were kind of cool. They were very, very cool. But it's funky. That Santa Foundation's track is really funky, but a couple of songs were like proper, like, no way. There's a song they did about Christine Keeler, who was a legendary sort of sex worker girl who was sleeping with members of the cabinet.
I remember that, yeah.
Fantastic idea, fantastic lyrics. I thought, you know, Glaxo Babies were great, and they were a lot of friends of mine.
What is Glaxo?
GlaxoKline Beecham. It's a drug company that... they, right, and some babies
have those defects.
They had to change their name for a while.
Okay. It's a drug company. Right? Okay. I had no idea. I thought it was... I didn't know what the fuck it was. Okay, so, but Dan's a guitar player in that band, huh?
Yeah, he's a guitar player.
Would you bring him over on bass?
I saw him on stage in his dark room, attacking his guitar with a dildo, and I thought, I'm going to chat to this guy. And he happened to live like four doors down from my local pub that I was in virtually every night of the week. But off the pub, I'd just go around his house and listen to weird music. And he was about one of the only guys in the neighborhood who was interested in interference in shortwave radio.
Wow.
I'm showing my true colors here. It's a bit of a fetish thing. But me and him would just sit and listen to the... And we'd find Radio Albania.
You know who was into ham radio was Greg Ginn. SST actually stands for Solid State Transmitter. When I first worked for him, I made antenna tuners.
Classic.
And that's where he got the idea of touring. All the mother punk bands in Hollywood, they didn't even have a van. Because he talked to people in other towns over the radio. He
remember those tracker songs?
Yes. So anyway,
there was a big hit from it. Was he involved in, there was a big hit over here, some guy talking about a track song on the radio.
No, that was Convoy. That's CB radio. CB radio is a little different than a ham radio. Ham radio is at home with the big antennas and you gotta be licensed. CB radio is
a piece of cattle. It must be an American thing.
CB radio is on the trucks, the trucker guys talking where the cops are, where the speed traps are.
I thought you were trucking when I first met
you. I trucked the boat to do gigs in the van. I ain't no fucking trucker. But anyway, so Dan starts off as a listening buddy, huh? And then you work him into the band.
And also talking about, it's like you and me. He talks about weird shit, reads weird people, underground press. You know, it's like a brother. You call him a brother, you know. Cool dude, mate. And when Simon left, I thought, great, let's get Dan in. And he was also obsessed with copycats. He put his bass for these weird machines. Classic.
Yeah.
So he's like a fellow spirit. So we got him straight away. And I heard Shake the Foundations when the Glaxos were doing it. And it was the hell of a groove, right? That Mr. X, Mr. Y, Another Day, Another Alibi. It was a good chant. And I just kept on singing it. It's like when you sing a song and you're into it during the week or whatever. So it was around the same period. So we were playing it live. I mean, Dan reformed the Glaxo Babies, and he said to me last night, he said, we might do a version of Box 9, one of the pop group songs, the new Citizen Zombie album that we're not doing at the moment. Do you know what I mean?
So, sure.
Fair play.
You know what? I think I've heard a version of you guys doing it with people from the Slits.
Probably, yeah. We did a tour with the Slits, and we did a duet with the Slits, so this the Ali Pally with a film from, but I can't remember.
Okay.
They're good mates. I mean, they're still good mates. Harry, you know, Harry passed away, but Kev and Tessa and stuff, good girls.
Yeah.
And we did a single with the Smiths. Yeah, yeah, good girls.
Yeah, Thurston said the guitar lady made a book that's pretty good.
Amazing.
Okay, let's listen to Shake Foundations. This is a live at Cologne 1980 pop group doing Glaxo Babies. His name Biv Bavel or
Dennis Bavel, amazing Dennis reggae, Bavel. The best dub producer in the world, really. I mean, but again, I wanted to get Dennis in because I was interested in all these kind of dub effects. But
sure.
You give somebody the title of producer, but you know, basically, you want certain outboard gear and you want somebody's skills. It's this idea of a producer telling somebody what to and helping a band is so patronizing. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So for you're saying the second album, How Much Longer Do We Tolerate Mass Murder? There was no producer. Nobody was anointed with that title.
No,
it was kind of a group.
Yeah, we all had our hands on the knob.
Right, right. And now you had some experience.
You know what I'm saying?
I know in England.
Back in those days, before Pro Tools, there were big tests, and we were all like dubbing up the guitar and pushing the.
We were
there were like six of us running the desk, kind of going like this.
During them, as the tape's mixing down, right? Everybody's fighting.
Exactly.
Yeah. We call them faders because I heard.
Fader.
Yeah, because in England, if you say knob, you better be careful. Yeah, because we got a slang here for a sound man. We call him knob man. But I found out in England you don't want to call a dude a knob man. Well, maybe you do.
This is so un-PC.
Yeah. So to me, those are the two big differences between the albums. It's the bass man.
We should both take down our trousers, though, live on air. Two men knobs. You'll see us. Don't worry, Mike.
But it's all right.
It's between me and you.
Yeah, that's right. And the rest of and the eavesdroppers. And the eavesdroppers. So to me, that's the difference. It's the producer or lack of producer or whatever. You explain it well how they're really kind of superfluous. And then the bass man. Because to
me, a certain extent, yeah. But the first album, again, we were kind of really, really, really kind of excited about going in the studio. We wanted to do everything we wanted to do in like the first 5 minutes. We wanted to live 100 miles an hour in 5 seconds, you know, exploding. Blah, 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 blah.
It's your first time in the studio, right?
We really used the studio as a kind of. We wanted to plug everything in backwards and do everything, and just the studio was part of the. If you hear those songs,
yeah.
Before we got in the studio, they're completely different things.
Oh, I know.
So it was really using the studio as a kind of experiment.
I know that because
The second one was more documenting what we were doing, like with the lyrics, it was documenting the time, and it was more like a thing of the moment. Do you know what I mean?
I know that about the first album because I've heard some John Peel.
Yeah.
And there's the same tunes with different treatment.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They're both valid to me. I like them all. I like it all.
Thank you.
And in fact, it would feel kind of jive if they were the same. Because you wouldn't be reacting.
We've got no intention. This brand new pop group stuff, we're going to flip it again, mate. You wouldn't even know it's a pop group. There's no way I'm going to make something similar to something else. I'm more interested in, what's that thing when you shag dead corpses, necrophilia, fuck it.
We say flog a dead horse.
That's going to be a long way.
Now look,
take the horse to water, but can you make it riding through the desert on a horse with no name? Na, 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 na.
You know what?
That's America for you.
You know what that was? That was some kids of U.S. servicemen living in England trying singing like Neil Young.
Classic.
Singing like Neil Young. Exactly. That's what I thought when I heard. Now, what I'm going to play now, Mark, is a tune I never heard before this. I never heard 73 Shadow Street.
You're lucky.
But we're going to hear it now.
I didn't hear it either. Wait till... I can't hear it.
Yeah, but you heard it.
For me. You play fucking... it again, Sam.
You're the one who fucking delivered it, okay? Let's listen.
Doing what they're doing. about the nausea, you're soon growing immunity.
I just took the lyrics off and put on my first solo album.
Yeah, people, we just heard 73 Shadow Street, and Mark's explaining, because this is new for Watt. He didn't really know this one. But it's I did hear parts of it in other ones, and he's explaining this was kind of a prototype, right?
Well, I didn't know it was going to be a prototype at the time.
Yeah, of course.
Dan had left. He now tells me we threw him out or something. I didn't realize until yesterday, right? After 35 years, we had a heavy therapy session.
You threw him out of the band back then?
I don't know. I can't remember any of the story. He said he came to a rehearsal, and Gareth walked in and said, oh, I thought there was going to be four of us. He'd come all the way from Bristol up to London or something. He was telling me stuff yesterday, which I'm pleased he told me now. You must get that with Mex or something. I didn't even know any of it, right? He must have been perceiving something in a different way. Anyway.
Some people, the
world is flat. So he didn't come to Helsinki. Again, it was a big kind of benefit for something going on there. I can't remember exactly what it is. I remember somebody giving me a really good book about politics. It was some heavy thing that was going on in an ice rink in Helsinki. Right?
Okay.
So we got there. A four-piece. John Waddington playing bass. He's a very good bass player. He wrote a lot of the bass lines, actually. Right?
Okay.
John is the kind of disco. John's a funk man, really. Right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know... So we were in rehearsal, somebody comes up with a riff, and then you take it out on the road and just jam with the riff a bit and chant and chant. That's how it was back in the day, right?
Sure.
And the song would kind of grow. So there was a riff, I was starting to write bits and bobs or something, and the summit was starting to grow. And that would have, if we'd have continued playing, that was to grow. But on that night, that was like one of the very, like that. And then we came back to London and did Trafalgar Square in front of 500,000 people. This big rally for campaign for nuclear disarmament brought London to a standstill.
500,000 people.
Brought London to a standstill. And on that day, it was the pop group played. In the evening after the pop group played, I played my first Mafia gig on the same stage. So
wow.
But you don't think of it at the time like that. I didn't know anything was going to end or start or whatever. So that was... Basically, Shadows, this Shadow Street song is the last ever pop group song from that period.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a great way to end the record then.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But just one thing, this Gareth wrote something for the press release. There's this cool website called Dangerous Minds, which is going to...
Oh, yeah, beautiful. I love it.
Great, guys. They're going to show a bit of this footage, right?
I think it's out of Cleveland, Ohio.
Great guys. There's some great things in America. Remember Slug, Dangerous Mind, great stuff in America, right? There's Amadio, Valencia as well, and in San Francisco. Great stuff going on. Good, cool people. Cool underground there at the moment. I'm impressed, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're going to show a little snippet of the thing, and Gareth wrote something about the band exploded dead or something. But the boys whose head, singular, exploded. It's more about when you're like 14, 15, and your brain is just, I mean, my brain's still like it. I'm getting worse. But your brain's just exploding. You're complete with ideas, and you can't even, I can't even write things down fast enough. And I get so frustrated. I got a storage room in Berlin with boxes and boxes of these, I don't know if you get over there, supermarket catalogs that put through the door, right? And it's the only thing that I can find to write on. I'm writing so fast I can't even read my writing when I go back and try and find the song. Oh. Anyway, so it's about your kind of head exploding with ideas. You know,
yeah, sure, sure. We say over, you know, over the brim, huh?
Yeah.
Over the brim.
That's full sexual here.
So that.
You don't really say that here.
Brimful. Okay. Actually,
you've changed.
You know,
you found your flame.
I found it. Brims actually was an old name before Bloods, and there was Crips, but one of the early names of Bloods was Brim and Piru.
Oh, I remember.
And it has to do with the hats.
You said brim, not rim.
Yeah.
The rim.
I know what rim is, yeah. It's kind of a...
Have you ever rimmed a brim?
No, I ain't rimmed a brim. I got other work to do, you know? We all got different gigs.
Tonight!
Yeah, we all got different gigs. And
keep your mind open, man.
Why ain't much of a rim man? But a...
But okay.
Yeah, so... Gareth is convinced this is when the band ended.
It's not when the band ended. It's the last song, I think. It's the last song we were starting
last
to
song
write.
For that big vacant period. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's when he got into his rip, rig, and panic with Bruce.
So you stop talking about periods.
Periods.
This is the problem between us cousins. Yeah, this isn't like women... Sorry. Brim, knob, period.
Yeah, right, all this shit's fucking it all up.
The English language.
Right. I think, I don't know, one of your great thinkers said we're a common people, we're two people divided by a common language.
Yes.
Maybe it was George Bernard Shaw or something.
You're speaking for yourself.
Yeah, I don't know, yeah.
I'm 15 million people.
You know me, I fuck up every goddamn paraphrase I do, so I'm sorry about that. So, I know that a few months ago you actually re-released How Much Longer Do We Tolerate?
Yes.
The actual thing, but also with
God, some... It was number 4 in the Japanese charts, mental.
Wow. But you put in extra stuff, right? There's supplements.
Not really, no. It was facsimile. All the posters and stuff. It was facsimile.
Yeah, because, when it came out over here, some guys got posters and some guys didn't.
Ah, shit.
And then there was a flyer.
Well, I don't know what that
a flyer is different than a poster, right?
That's not to do with us.
Okay, a flyer is like a one-page thing, you know, where, like in Y, it was a poster. That thing folded out.
Yeah, what is it? How much longer? It's got 8 posters in it. There's fold-out newspaper things about Pol Pot and all the political information about the riots and everything, yeah.
Okay, the one I got, it had a red flyer, red paper, and it had like some words on it, some lyrics, and that was it. It was not really a poster. It was a flyer.
Well, that's rarer. That's a sort of promo copying, like, I think.
Really? I got it from Zeta London. Oh, there's something on the...
£500, that's worth it.
I ain't into that shit. Come on, don't worry.
Sure.
I'm going to keep it forever. No one's prying it out of my fucking dead fingers. But there was something on the cover, because you guys used some newspaper motif.
Yeah.
And it says 6-Minute War Madness. Explain that.
That's what was happening. I was walking around, and there's a footage of us on Belgian television where I'm wearing a helmet, right, a military helmet. They thought there was going to be conscription in England, there was going to be a call-up, that Clash song, It's Up to You Not to Heed the Call-Up. There was some nuclear kind of Cold War alert going on. That is from the newspaper at the time.
You know what I remember? There was a corporal in the U.S. Army in it was called West Germany then.
Yeah,
he put on the wrong tape for a war game, and everybody thought it was live. You know, it was happening, it was coming on. That's what it was.
You do that on your show.
Now they don't give Watt those kind of tapes.
I don't play games.
They don't trust him with it. Okay, that's what it refers to. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, hey, when you get a chance to, you know, who was in charge of the pop group art stuff?
Me.
Yeah, of course.
Stupid. Always happy, always will be.
You know what I like, though? You wouldn't use scissors. You would, like, rip the pictures.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that was so fucking happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that white rip bit. You know, yeah.
Sure.
I tell you what we have made. We've remade those Mirror of Prostitutes t-shirts with Margaret. I don't know if you ever saw those. But classic.
No. Well, I noticed it was a big departure with Citizen Zombie album cover.
Yeah.
So, like, you took a recruitment poster or something and, like, turned it on itself.
Yeah, I was trying to make a cereal packet. I'm working on something now, which is a toothpaste that says System on it or something. It's.
Toothpaste?
You know, like a toothpaste packet. I was in Thailand or something.
Oh, a tube.
I'm here, something. Toothpaste to clean its teeth.
Like, yeah, yeah, it's in a tube.
Yeah, but the actual box.
The toothpaste is called,
in English, it's called Sistema. And I'm trying to think of an album title that I can, something about System, I can use it. Oh. It's like an anti-war. It's like the system is a toothpaste, sorry.
Sure. So the new album doesn't have a name yet, of course not.
Not yet, no.
And then, in fact,
I've got the artwork ready. I often think of art.
You've already got the artwork ready.
And montages at the same time as the thing.
Okay. And, but you haven't really recorded anything. You're still cooking up tunes, right?
No, it's going to happen fast, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every band's different, okay? Some people, they practice the tunes big time before they go to tape. Some guys, they go to tape and work on it as they're doing it.
Yeah. Well, it's something can come from anything. Something can come from, like, a recording of Supernatural. It can come from anywhere with us.
Well, you were saying earlier, right now you're in a practice room. You're not really in a studio, right?
No, it's the studio.
Oh, it is a studio.
Yeah, Dan came up to do the bass lines.
Okay.
Dan's, yeah.
I thought this was like the composing part or whatever.
No.
Okay. You mix them together, the actual recording and the composing.
Yeah,
together.
And the thing is, if you're working with, like, kind of creative engineers and dub guys, if you're working with Adrian Shield or Dennis Rebell, you get a beat, and then suddenly Dennis, when we make him wide, made the thing sounded like huge kind of thunder cracks.
Sure.
So... that, correct, for me, it's like making a film.
Yeah.
As soon as a weird sound develops, you've got an atmosphere, it's like rainy in a city, and then you can, I'm working on something called War Incorporated, like War Inc., right?
Right.
But I'm searching for the atmosphere to place it in to make it kind of malevolent, you know?
Okay.
So it's a bit like a radio play, the way I see things. And then I kind of use choruses as kind of idents. I'm using a lot of things called risers, which are like science fiction takeoff noises, which kind of go...
Sure.
For the chorus, you get a liftoff.
You're making mime movies.
Yeah.
Is Adrian Sherwood involved?
No.
Because he wasn't...
Worked with him in a lot of other stuff.
But, he's the mafia guy, right? Or one of the mafias. I think right now, Doug Wimbush is with Living Color.
Yeah. I've written some stuff, and then they're rocking the moment.
You know what? Last about 14 months ago, I got to do all of Maggot Brain with him. And... Viper Room in West Hollywood. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was going to be some, like, you know, blues jam and E minor or something. You know, this guy called me up to come up there, and Doug Wimbush is on the stage, and we do the whole Maggot Brain. George Clinton comes on stage, Michael Hampton and Blackbird McKnight, and I heard some of the songs they never did live. Blackbird McKnight was up there. I was playing right next to him. I couldn't believe it. And I was told later that some of the songs they had never done live, like Back in My Mind and stuff. I was playing bass. I was the bass. Doug was playing. Mr. Wimbush was like doing these effects, you know, with those pedals.
Yeah. So you were playing bass.
I was playing more of the bass. Yeah, I didn't know even Doug was going to be there.
Is there anybody you haven't, Mike? You can die happy. Fuck you.
Get this, Mark. We're playing bass.
Get that put on your gravestone, man.
Oh man, it's one of my all-time best gigs ever. There was a part in Back in My Mind.
Why did they phone you?
Huh?
Sorry.
It was this other guy. He was like, you know, jammed.
He
come
up somebody else's phone.
This guy, his name was escapes me at the time. Sorry. But he said, hey, why come up, you know, I'm going to have the jam and you can come up there. And you know, I like him a lot. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And I was dreading it because I usually don't like these kind of jam things, you know.
Yeah,
they're purposeless.
Either.
Yeah, it's, oh. But I get up there and it's not that.
Wow.
And I had mentioned why not do all Maggot Brain. I just as a whim, you know, because I love that fucking
album. You mentioned it.
And it was, yeah. And cool. Lo and behold, we get up there and Doug Wimbish is on the stage and these guys and we do the whole album. And I remember we doing the tune back in my mind, back in our mind. And when it comes to the change to the chorus, I looked over at Doug. And he saw me move to the right chords, and he gave me the nod like, "What? You know this song?" Dude. And I had never been so validated since I started playing with D Boone or something. You know, I couldn't believe it. Doug gave me that look like, "Yeah,
wow."
And for me, after all these years, all these gigs, that was. He really was righteous to do that.
You've got to play some Maggot Brain now, man. Play some of the original.
Yeah. We started off with, you know, we went in order. We did the whole fucking album.
Fuck you, man.
Was that a trip? So you've written...
I tell you, there'd be some great people gathering for Bernie Worrell. I'm not sure what's going on or something, but they're doing some amazing...
He's fighting cancer right now. I got to do some recording with him last year. And in fact, there was a project I was involved with. He had to quit to do this cancer fight.
Right.
And he's incredible. I got to
say to somebody the other day, right, because the pop group stuff I'm trying to make really, really, the beginnings of it, really, really funky underneath before we go any weirder, right? And I was saying to somebody the other day about when, because I was doing, you know, after the pop group, when I was in New York, I was starting to get hold of Doug and everybody, I was starting to bring that kind of stuff into my kind of palette, right? Sure. But when Talking Heads went from like Psycho Killer, which is real kind of loft, kind of television-y, kind of no wave, right? Suddenly they got Bernie Worrell involved, they went to Compass Point, and Tina and what's his name, and they started kind of locking that.
Brian Eno.
When you lock no wave and funk, you get this weird two-headed beast, which is really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian Eno was involved with that, too.
Yeah.
The
best track from that sums that up is the track Eno did. It was on a B-side. It's called RAF, where he's got Judy Nye on the Paddy Paladin from Snatch on it, which is brilliant. This is a kind of motoric funk, no-wave rhythm,
motoric,
which is absolutely
no
brilliant.
Wave funk rhythm.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. So, you were...
I call it a blank wave now, after Richard's blank generation.
Yeah, of course. But you're saying you got a new Mafia album in the works, in your
mind.
There's
all sorts of things going on, you know. There's all sorts. The next few years are stacking up.
Well, bring some of them out. Pull them out. Tell us.
I'm just creating where the things go, whatever's happening. I don't know. At the moment, you know, the pop group is like a 5-year plan.
Sure.
Right? But nothing else has stopped. You know, I'm helping Skip with Little Axe, I'm helping Doug with Loving Keller, I'm helping Adrian with On You stuff, you know. There's all sorts of things. I did something with Lee Perry. There's all sorts of things going on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's all cool.
Yeah. And they're just different facets of your expression, right? And then the cats you play with, the collaborate.
Well, we swap, yeah. People does it, you do a favor, you know, and you could do the favor back. We trade.
Sure. Barter.
Yeah.
Barter expression. That's interesting.
Yeah.
What a marketplace.
So what else are you up to, Mike? Are you coming over here?
Yeah, I am with the Italian guys.
Right.
In September, October.
The Tafoka thing's finished, right?
No, when I get a chance, he wants to do an album.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, he's a treasure, man. I really dig him. He's been living in Austria the last 10 years, and
so you might be you might come over here and record some of it.
He might want to come out to California and do it. He told me.
Oh wow!
We can do it.
Give me a shout if you need any backing vocals or something. I got a lot of pleasure. I helped somebody. You remember Jeffrey Lee Pierce?
Absolutely.
Iggy was in on as well. He's this cool guy who's like really looking after his memory and stuff and looking after all the old tapes and bits. A good old friend of his who was in a band or something. They do these kind of benefits for a charity and of finishing off or covering some of Jeffrey's old songs. Iggy did it, Nick Cave did it.
Yeah,
I did something with Thurston Moore on the last one. And they're starting to do something else on that one. It's cool shit, man. It's great doing... I know it's a bit kind of super groupy, like Blind Faith or something, but it's just kind of, you get out of your zone, and it's great crashing other people's, going against Thurston Moore we found a track that with Jeffrey's voice on it, that I kind of sang against it, which is amazing.
Oh wow, yeah.
Yeah.
A duet.
Yeah.
I know Kid Congo's out there touring with his Pink Monkey Birds, and he played for a while with Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Really good cat. I think he lives in D.C., but he's out touring right now. Jeffrey, you know, he started out writing in this magazine called Slash.
Yeah.
That a French guy named Kickboy put out. And it was very important for SoCal scene.
Because, okay.
Yeah, it was so small, but by having a magazine or a zine, some kind of community. And he was called Ranking Jeffrey Lee because he liked to write a lot of reviews of ska and reggae.
Right.
Yeah, Ranking Jeffrey Lee was the first time I saw his name in print. And then he just, you know, the whole idea was start a band, you know, you write about bands. You know those guys who wrote in
zines. What's the name? Romy, that Japanese girl was in it as well. She's great.
He ended up learning how to rap in Japanese.
Wow.
At the end of, near the end of his life there.
Wow.
Interesting guy.
They met a lot in Europe, in the German scene and French scene. So the Gun Club held way up, you know, before Nick Cave and stuff. They did some legendary gigs.
Much more appreciated overseas than back home.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, well, U.S. people are like that.
Right.
No, I mean, look at the bebop. How many bebop cats had to go, Bud Powell? You know,
they all end up in Paris, didn't they?
They had to do because people wouldn't support here. But anyway, Tal Falco, okay, I will tell him that, you know, because he's itching to make an album.
That is cool. Has he got a label?
Well, you know, this Org Music, he put these 245s on and, but I don't know, he hasn't made promises to anybody or anything, but I know he wants to record and,
Push it, Mike, push it.
You know, he's a little older.
Yeah, but I find with some of these things, you actually have to use to do the legwork and get it together because, you know, it's cool, though.
No, but I think when you get a little older, you get a little more hankering. I got to leave some more stuff behind.
Yeah.
And I think that's
Who was it that like Bowie was recording right to the end? It's brilliant.
Yeah, I think, that's right. Elvin Jones was doing it. I mean, there's a lot of people like that. I want to be somebody like that. I want to go
I heard about this playwright guy that suddenly they told him there was something wrong with him. He wrote his best work. You know, what else are you going to do? Sit around worrying about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you think of people like Rambo. They only did it like 2-3 years and then they were done.
Yeah.
But other people, I think it's a calling and they just got to keep going. And you're right.
They can't stop.
They probably get better. They probably get better.
Yeah.
Do you have a? Did you ever worry about what you don't want to do, or have you made it possible in your situation where you don't get forced into having to do crap?
No, the thing is, I'm my own master. I don't work for anybody.
Right.
Right. And I can if I'd rather starve than do crap personally. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And there's good years and there's bad years or whatever. And I can't do it. So, I mean, I just can't do it. It's not possible for me to do it, really.
So you say you're inherently autonomous.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I've got no problem of like working with Massive Attack. Do you know what I mean? There's like, the interesting thing is there's some really cool, even, you know, there's some great people on the other side of the fence in the overground or whatever and doing really interesting. For me at the moment, most of the really interesting sounds and noises are coming from like R&B.
Okay.
Like weird skittery kind of mad, like, you know, Rihanna and stuff. It's just, I'm hearing weird shit coming from the other side and some of the stuff that's supposedly weird and underground, it's just like people were doing it in the moment times.
Yeah. Connected.
Do you know what I mean? This myth of the avant-garde is a bit wank, if you ask me. But so it's not really them and us. But it's
you know,
it's
my cool. My drummer. Cool.
But I'm getting into, you know, there's all sorts of shit you can do.
That's funny you mentioned that word.
Mind, you can push it into anything.
You mentioned that
and
word.
And often you just inject energy into other people's situations, which is cool.
That's a gift. That's a beautiful
thing. Or you give them but faith in themselves.
You mentioned that word avant-garde. My drummer man friend Larry was saying that's actually a military term.
Yeah, the avant-garde, yeah.
It's the guys who go over the wire first.
Yeah. but I'd rather be reconnaissance. Do you know what I mean?
Huguenots.
The Huguenots.
Huguenots, that's how you say it.
That's really Huguenots.
Huguenots. No, over here they say Huguenots. And you guys say fillet. And you guys say fillet. At least we say fillet.
Fill it up.
No. You know, it's all really interesting. I love every time I get to talk with you, Mark.
No problem, Mark. I don't know if I can fill up this whole hour, though, mate.
We only got a minute left.
Okay, cool.
Don't worry.
Better make another album really quickly.
You can make another 30 album.
30 Seconds to Die.
30 Seconds to Die.
What?
Where's right now, you're in London. What's the best place to play in London?
Well, this is what we're talking about. It's, for me, it sounds like the 100... I think it's the 100 Club.
Well, have you ever heard of this place called...
It's a little place that used to be done in the jazz days.
No, I played there with Black Flag and Minutemen in 1982.
Yeah, 83. It's on Austria. It's right in the middle of town. And it's proper.
What about this place called Odo?
Cafe Otto, yeah.
You like that?
It's kind of, it's the kind of heart of the experimental thing. Yeah. Otto is where you get the heads.
Okay.
Yeah, and they'll guarantee. Yeah.
They asked me to do something called. They'll
look after you, Mike.
They asked me to do a thing called a residency. Be there 3 nights.
Exactly. Well, that's where the team did it. Yeah. It's good. The Lanny's just doing something there. Yeah, it's good. They publicized it really well, which is often a problem in England.
Okay. If Mark Stewart says it's okay, then I'm going to go for it. I want to thank
Otto Pedro. Pedro Resident Otto.
I know what the word
the
means.
Top.
I know the word Odo means sound in Japanese.
Well, you know a lot.
I want to thank you so much for being on. Really enjoyed getting the backstories on all this stuff that I've wondered about for 35 years. Thank you so much. When you have some of your other projects come, please, let's talk about it via the Skype.
Skype me up, Mike.
All right. Do you have plans for playing in the U.S. soon?
Later in the year, we will return.
Okay. I hope you come to SoCal because I want to witness that again. And thank you.
Hell yeah, witness.
And thanks for so much for shouting out for my ma. The 4 surgeries, they got the cancer out.
Shut up.
Yeah.
She's all right.
Yeah. Well,
oh, wow.
She's battling this thing called COPD from the 65 years of smoking. But she did stop smoking, but the bladder cancer's gone, so thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
People, it's been April 17, 2016 edition of Watt for Pedro Show, special guest Mark Stewart. Everybody, keep your
respect to Mike. Well, thank you, mate.
Keep your powder dry.
Keep the flame burning.